workshop on transportation impact fees. Council, last Wednesday, most of you were actually there. We discussed what we had discussed the last couple councils, as well as the concept of the square footage and where the city of Ferndale fell in compared to Linden and Bellingham. And the direction that we got from council on Wednesday was not necessarily to change anything from the $2,604 that we had, but instead to go with that, focus on looking at Main Street, because we identified Main Street as about 10% of that could be considered growth-related. And so we talked to Transpo about that, and we were able to actually take Thornton down a little bit from a 60% down to a 59% and move Main Street up, where we reached $2,604 and still fund Thornton, a portion of it, and fund Main Street. Now, talking about Thornton, if you'll recall, we had essentially two projects, or two phases of one project, where one of them is the flyover going over I-5. That, to get us to 2,604, is 15% of the total project cost. The intent there was to be able to, at some point in the future, move forward on that project, either taking it to the citizens, taking it to WashDOT, taking it to other agencies, and get full funding, but not to fund that project at that point beyond kind of feasibility analysis, do we want it or not. The remaining portion, the kind of west side, which would improve Thornton, take it down, and then connect to Second, is still funded in the $2,604 dollar amount. The council last Wednesday said also look at possible ways that we could use Thornton as a kind of pivot point to get you to a dollar value that the council was comfortable with. We did not hear a specific dollar value from the council committee at that point, and so we're basically here to ask you whether or not you have come up to a dollar one, what additional information you want us to provide to you tonight to help you make that decision. And I do have, as Greg indicated on Wednesday, and I apologize for the small print, a summary of the projects that are impact fee eligible. This isn't new information. It's information that's contained on Exhibit A, or Appendix A of the chapter. But what we've done is we've eliminated all of the projects that are not funded by impact fees. So this is how you get to 2,604, what we're passing around.
Yes? Just to be clear, the Planning Administration Committee did recommend approval of the 2604.
They did recommend.
Okay,
and so that's basically where we are today, 2,604.
You got to be kidding me.
It looked bigger on my screen.
Resolution, the administration will not use less than 12 font. I see that coming. In any document.
I printed it out,
Jory,
and then I left.
We can't let you get by on this.
Now they're.
I do have a computer that I could display it on.
No, I guess. Why don't you read it?
I can see it, just so you know.
I have a question, Jory.
Yes, sir.
How in this plan that we're reading through, I didn't see we're going to look at cumulative effect of businesses on there, say like the Bounty in Maine. That, okay, you have that as one of the projects, or it was, I don't know if it's on, still on here, I can't read it. but that was one of the areas that was identified. But, you know, when does that get triggered, and by who? And if we're going to say, if you're talking about the bank going in, Hagen's, and all that other land that's available to develop on La Bounty,
when
how
do we?
How does that tie into that?
Well, what we've done in the past is the six-year capital improvement update that happens every year was kind of done independently of this, where it was much more, I believe, of of council and staff saying what project do we want to do, and then us seeing whether or not we could fund those projects. Now, what we're going to be moving towards more and more, since we've identified how much total funds we can get for any one project, we are going to be able to say in our impact fee account, we have $500,000. And thus, if we wanted to do the signal upgrades on Main Street, that's $500,000. We have now at our disposal the maximum amount of impact fee funds that we will ever have for that project. So, based on that, maybe we put that on a six-year list and we just go ahead and do it. That's one of the ways where we can decide when to pull the trigger. Another way, the specific example that you gave, Main and LeBounty, is the planned action is really going to inform that, where the planned action ordinance is going to have much more specific triggers for when that improvement becomes necessary. Where that would be just that separate ordinance, and we'd say, okay, we've reached 1,000 new trips that have been created. Now we need to do this project. The third way is level of service, where the state laws through concurrency say if a project will drop it below our adopted level of service, we must do that transportation project or we have to say no to any new development. And that can either mean that the project does it or maybe it drops below the level of service just because of growth here in the city or out in the county or wherever. That's when the city and staff would say, we've done our annual estimate, state of the transportation network, and we've determined that that intersection is in danger of falling beneath our adopted level of service within the next year. That would be a trigger then to council to say, all right, it looks like it's time to go ahead and go with that project.
Another way to think about it as far as the triggers go is that right when we get the planned action done, that is SEPA. That falls under the SEPA threshold. So if the bank comes in, and let's say the planned action had already been completed, so we now have the planned action ordinance. So you come in with your bank, and you do a traffic study, or you look on the chart, and you say you're going to generate so many trips. When the planned action is done, we'll look down the list and see what your proportionate share of the various improvements are. If the bank comes in, which it looks like it will, before the planned action, then you do SEPA on it. And you simply determine as a standalone project what its impacts are, and then you negotiate with them and figure out what sort of improvements in lieu of impact fees they might do, because the cost of the improvements are offset against their
fees. So several small businesses could come in and not trigger the trigger whatever to change LeBounty and Maine. But then all of a sudden, Jack in the Box wants to come in next to Jiffy, oil place. And now all of a sudden, nope, you can't come in because now you triggered the thing. But all these other guys got to come in. I'm not talking about, because I know the big box guys are going to trigger.
For the little guys.
If
they came in and individually they were not enough to trigger any of the improvements, they would simply pay their impact.
But they paid the fees.
So now, in your case, the Jack in the Box comes in and says, oh, wow. Jack and Box combined with all of these other little guys is now triggered it, so we'd figure out proportionally what Jack and the Box should pay. Hopefully we would have the monies available from those other guys. We'd lump them together, and then we would do the project.
They're not paying more than all the other
guys. What I heard Yori saying is that the money goes into the pot, and that then can be spent
on any of the list. Right.
So what if we've already spent the money on Bovander in Maine, Jack in the Box comes in next to Jiffy Oil, whatever, and now we don't have the money to fix LeBounty in Maine. Does that mean Jack in the Box can't come in?
That or we find the money and we simply do a developer reimbursement so follow-on developers could pay us back. So there's various ways, because we're not going to be charging the full cost to these, because no one development is going to say you causes a new traffic light or a new turn lane or things like that. Chances are these little guys are going to have cumulative effects. So hopefully we would have collected this money from different sources and have it available that we could cobble together. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the size.
And then Ingram?
I have two questions, one about this topic and one about another one. So I know that you've explained more than once the money can be used in other ways. If you start seeing them come in the same general area, like at what point, who is it up to say, let's not spend the money here, let's kind of keep, let's hold on to this because it looks like we're going to be triggering this area. Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Well, it would be really all of staff advice and counsel then, because we would look at the projects and all of the different funding that could go in for these different projects, and Janice and I would probably say there is now a need for this project or that project coming down the pipe, and Mark would say, well, we've got this line item, impact fees, we've got this potential line item, and we can afford this project or that
project. So you could take a look and say, okay, we have this, there's a need for this project, but money has kind of come in sort of for these other projects. Do you guys want to take all that money towards this project, or should there be another alternative?
Is that the discretion of future council?
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The importance of 6-year TIP.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, and also the importance of having sufficient impact fees, because the worst thing would be if you had two or three little guys come in, we have low fees, they pay their shares, and then even combined, we still don't have enough money to do the project.
Right.
And there's the importance, too, of establishing a kind of state of the transportation that we would do every year or once every couple of years, where we'd look at the existing level of service, we'd look at the impact fees that we've received, and we'd bring that to you before the 6-year conversation on that, and we'd say, based on that report, here's what we recommend on the 6-year, and then you'd be able to make that decision in confidence.
And I'm going to have one thing, too, is that one of the things we're having Transpo do, and we've been talking about having Burke consultants, who are more of a financial consultants, help us with, is what they call the fiscal sustainability. And they would help us then say, don't have them put in this turn lane, have someone do this. So you don't put in one thing and then have to take it out later, and so you can have some sort of a plan to be able to have enough funds for these larger projects. So they're going to help us with kind of a roadmap to see potentially what projects should happen in what order in order so at the end of the day you end up having this coordinated improvement.
My second question, hopefully this isn't something that has been addressed in the last 100 months we've been going through this, but apologize if it has. So I can see on here that there's a different amount for the traffic impact fees. Some are you have 100 and some all the way down to 10. How do you justify what number goes where? Because I see two on here that are both considered intersection operations improvements, yet one is 100% and one is 50%.
What are the two ones?
In this particular case, there's the Main Street Hovander Drive intersection, which is the second one listed, and that one says it's 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is the last one in that I kind of section, and it's the Portal Way, Interstate 5 ramps. Mm-hmm. Intersection mm-hmm. operations improvement, and mm-hmm. that one's at 100.
The Main Street Hovander intersection, part of it, 50%, would be curing an existing deficiency. Can't use impact fees for that.
Okay, so that's not listed on there, but that explains why that one's
exactly. And okay. Just kind of rule of thumb there. The Portaway I-5 southbound ramps. Right now, if you recall the studies that Transpo did, right now it is not failing. There's not an existing deficiency, but it's soon to break. That will only break as a result of growth.
Okay. And then on the other ones that are at 50, is it the same 50 and then 10 and then 59? Is it the same idea? Are you looking at half of it, half of the solution is fixing an existing problem? Is that how you come up with the number?
Well, with the Main Street one, R6, that's 10%. That is the cost that Reichart and EB have estimated for the turn lanes that are on the length from Douglas to Church. Those are the only growth-related improvements on that project. The rest is more maintenance and operations, widening the road but not adding capacity. So only 10% of that project is growth-related.
Okay, then how'd you come up with the 59 one?
The 59%, remember that Thornton is composed of two portions. So it's the flyover all the way, and it's the construction down to second.
Okay.
So the flyover all the way took out 41% of that total cost. Or I'm sorry, it took out 40% of that total cost,
right.
Which left us at 60%. We then took 1%, which was the equivalent cost of 10% of Main Street, to equal it out to be $2,604.
But it was a little bit arbitrary. I mean,
I don't hear the same
type of justification used there.
Right. Some of it is science from the standpoint of if we add turn lanes, common center turn lanes on Main, that gives you more throughput because people are actually able to get out of the traveled way so more traffic can get through. How much? 10%. Could we have gone 11%, 12%? Probably. Could we go 8%? Probably. So there's science and then there's some art to all this. And we're realizing, too, that what we tried to do was not increase the amount over the 2,600, but yet pull in what logically should be a portion of the Main Street project. So we were trying to we're trying to shoot for a sweet spot, but also have the science to back up for it. We can certainly charge less than we're supposed to. No one's going to take us to court and say that our fees are too, well, they could, but few people would ever take us to court and argue that our fees are too low. So we need to be able to defend them, and these are certainly defensible. Some of them are quite easy because they're simply... Some of them are more scientific than others. Yes.
Okay. Councilperson Ingram?
Well, I was curious on here, Yuri, and it might be a question for Janice, and she's not here. On I-6, the Hovander Main Street deficiency, it shows a total cost estimate to correct that, but is there actually a plan to correct that? Because we've never seen anything that says this is how we're going to do this. So without a plan, how did we come up with $460,000 in cost to fix a intersection we know is horridly wrong, but without a plan, where do we come up with the cost estimate?
That might be more appropriate for Janice. I don't know specifically, and it may be that there are a number of different options from.
Some of these we have, if you remember our last year, our six-year street plan, the thicker document that Janice came up with, some of those projects actually had cost estimates in there. So from there, I think Transpo used that. In cases where they weren't, Transpo just used their experience and looked at it and said, you know, given their expertise of traffic engineering, how much would it cost to put in a traffic light at that? Yep. So it's an educated estimation.
The other thing that I've got a question on is, and I'm not saying we should have done this in the case of Chase Bank, but how much control, if any, does the city have over encouraging new businesses that are coming to town to utilize the existing vacant buildings that we have in inventory?
We can suggest. I know we've had people come to town looking for spots, and I know the mayor's taken some folks around town to show them what's available. Other places, you know, banks are certainly a prime example. You know, they have a kind of a business model fixed in their mind, and for whatever reason, they've decided that they want to be where they want to be. Yeah, you can encourage it.
The other thing too, kind of to your question, when projects do get on a 6-year and we have more specific information, the idea behind this is we would then go back into this document and we would say, actually, Hovander Main, it's not 460, it's actually 480. Or maybe we come up with a really low cost improvement and then we reduce it down. Right now, since we're talking about projects, some of which might be 15 or 20 years out, the idea was as they get on the 6-year, we're going to revise it much more, and then we'll have a more closer approximation.
Councilperson Zimmerman, Hanson, and then Goodrich. George, does that number over time creep up along with inflation? Like you said, that example went from 460 to 480. Is that something that's kind of indexed along, or do we find ourselves having to revisit this, or how?
There are two ways where there is an automatic adjustment. It may be up or it may be down based on the WSDOT Construction Cost Index. And so I believe that's a yearly look-in. It might be a once every 2-year look-in where we would say inflation for these type of projects has gone up by 3%, therefore each one of these is increased by 3% or it goes down 3% and we adjust it that way. That's one of the mechanisms. The other one is that as we get more information about this specific project, we know what our right-of-way costs are, for instance, or we actually have a design, we could use that engineer's estimate to go up or down. That's why Main Street is a little bit more focused than some of the other ones, where we have a more legitimate cost estimate because Reichart and EB's been working on
it. Now, is this the culmination of all of transposed work? Because well, I mean, this was like 2 years ago, we did a $250,000 contract with them about that. Now we've had another group since then that have done another thing for $200,000, but that's a separate issue. Yes. And that's paid by the developers looking into that for
right. Quadrant. Transpo's doing both. Transpo did this under Transpo was hired to do our traffic impact fees. So they've taken what in the planned action is called the no action alternative, that is the natural growth of the city. So the Transpos has figured out citywide, if we just continue to grow in a somewhat natural or historic method, more people will move here, more businesses will locate here, slowly we'll get more and more, and these are the kind of projects we need just for that. Now, on top of that, and only for the corridor of Main Street, Transpo has now come along and said, okay, now instead of just the city growing in a nice, natural pace, what happens when a couple big boys plop into town in that area? So what they're doing now, so right now we have this underlying traffic impact fee, $2,600 list of projects. When the planned action is done, there's going to be a whole new list of projects specific to that area and specific to the new impacts that are going to go on top of it. And so the plan action is going to say, you guys now need to pay for your share of the underlying plus your proportionate share of the new stuff. So Transpo was involved in both the underlying work for the impact fees and the new work they're currently doing for the plan action.
I have to say that all my years on council in Washington County, is probably the most challenging and complex thing. Maybe it's just me, but it's gone on a while. It's hard to follow. And then when it comes right down to it, I mean, like say the last meeting, well, here's Bellingham's charges, here's what London charges, where we want to be, you know, more or less or whatever. But it just, it's crazy. But
yeah. Well, way to get a chance to see, I mean, the first draft of the EIS, what, about that thick?
Yeah, it's about 400 pages maybe.
Yeah.
We're working our way through it. It's a sizable document.
And it's definitely something to keep you awake, right? 15 minutes at a time.
Yeah, and I agree. This stuff is tedious. It really can be extremely tedious. And I want to thank you guys. I mean, you guys have followed along the whole time, and I think you all understand this much more than, honestly, I think a lot of the city councils. Because a lot of them, they don't take the time to really delve into the intricacies of this stuff.
So I have Hanson, Goodrich, Ferry, and then back to Zimmerman, and then over to Metzler. We don't have to just go down more. Councilperson Hanson.
I'm really troubled by this Thornton Road thing. Does anybody seriously believe that in 20 years we will have accumulated enough money at today's dollars inflated to build a Thornton Road at it's not quite 100%, but it would have been 100% if we would have gone to fly over the freeway. But it's 100%, essentially 100% of flying over the railroad down into Second. Does anybody seriously believe we're going to do a $22 million road project, no matter what your fees are? The reason I say that is, having been on the council 12 years, you'd have thought 12 years ago, the Thornton Road project was imminent. The way the, quote, politicians were talking back then, we need to do this, we need to do it now. And then we ran up against, well, look at how many millions of dollars it is, and there's no, well, let's start setting aside some money, a couple hundred thousand a year. You realize how long it would be, a couple hundred thousand a year to get there? I don't believe, unless the public, meaning the citizens of Ferndale, want to vote themselves a bond issue, that we're going to pay, with traffic impact fees, the Thornton Road flyover. I don't mean over the freeway. I think that's so obnoxiously expensive. We won't ever. I mean, that's. I doubt that it'll ever happen. I think there'll be a road over the freeway at Aldergrove before there'll ever be one at Thorne. It's a personal opinion. I realize that. I'm having trouble with that because it's so much of this. And we're not talking about it being a little share of the total amount. We're talking about it being over half of the total amount. 22 million of 37 million. So 15 million of this is for other traffic improvements in town as a result of growth. And 22 million of it plus is for one project. I don't have a great deal of difficulty with that. I don't mind setting aside money for future improvements to help get people in and out of Ferndale. I have a problem with us setting this fee this high at this time for this one project, because that's what we're doing. Might as well say it. This fee is being set at this time for this project. 50% of it, more than 50%.
It was interesting because I had a conversation with Transpo about kind of just that today, where the fee is at once too high in some cases. You know, we've been talking a lot about, gosh, you know, how is someone going to deal with the $2,600 fee? But it's also too low because $2,600 at a time doesn't seem to add up very quickly. And what Transpo said was if you intend to do a project, the city needs to show a commitment, and 15% doesn't get you the commitment from the voters or from other agencies. And that was basically their direction. I mean, then it becomes a policy.
15%.
I'm sorry.
What's that?
I think his point is that, you know, we're going to be collecting this money incrementally along the way. And I don't think we're going to be able to take a portion of every traffic impact fee and slide it into an account and save it up for Thornton. What we'll probably need to do is save some of that money to be able to do a lot of the engineering that's going to be involved before we even went to the voters for authorization. But what it will give us is that seed money, so first of all, we can use it towards engineering and determining perhaps getting right-of-way or what have you, because like there's that house below there, which we probably need to get rid of before the we could swing back down to the roundabout. But this will also give us the money to actually do some of our other projects. So I agree that chances are for us to do the railroad flyover down to the roundabout will probably require a bond issue, probably not for the full amount because we should have some cash on hand.
Well, we can bond against that too. I mean, when you do a bond, right, you can bond against future revenues.
Yeah.
But I'm bothered by what you're just saying. Because what you just said was, essentially, we probably won't do 100% of the railroad flyover.
Through these fees. Because
we're going to charge them anyway.
Because we probably wouldn't have the development activity and the ability to save it. We're going to have a lot of these other projects are going to come up. The discipline, I guess, to save the money.
Oh, I understand. All these other projects will probably come before but if we're charging $2,604, we essentially are saying we're going to pay 59% of the flyover, and 60% of the flyover is just the railroad. So we're going to charge the fee to do 100%, 99% of the railroad flyover. We're going to charge that money, or we're going to use it somewhere else. Is that what I'm hearing?
Chances are we probably, because we don't earmark it. We didn't do the math on this, but it'd be interesting to find out just how much development would have to come into town at $2,600 a pop for us to collect $22 million. I don't know if we would even in the next 5, 10, 20 years, if we would have that much development come into town. Because it's one thing to say that a certain percentage of each trip is earmarked towards this project, but if the development doesn't come in, you'll never collect that much money.
8,538 times 2,600 is 22 million.
So we need 8,000 vehicle trips.
I don't know how many big box does.
Big boxes are usually in the... hundreds?
22% is about 60% of this. 60% of the fees. So out of the 2,600 we're collecting, 1,500 of it is supposed to be saved and used towards this Thornton Road project.
1,500 of the 2,600.
1,500 of the 2,600 we're supposed to set aside, you know, if you know, theory works and works. You know.
And that's what bothers me, because I believe that we're going to do these other projects along the line. Over the next 20 years, everything but that bottom one is probably feasible with the fees that we're going to collect. I'm not as troubled by the 2,600 as by the fact that it's even on there. This, when you say 100%, isn't there a figure floating around that these impact fees aren't all of the charges? It's only a percentage of the charges.
Even when you look at the 100%?
Well, it's a percentage of street projects and the rest don't qualify. Is that where I'm coming from?
Yes, correct. Okay. Thornton happens to be almost 100% growth related. Right now we don't need it, so it's higher. But overall, we're right around, I think the total budget was something like $77 million. That includes M&O and all of
that. That's all the maintenance, and that's all the non-growth-related stuff as well. Do we have to, and I'm dominating, I'm sorry, last question. Do we have to take every dollar collected under the traffic impact fees and set it aside only for growth projects, or can it be scanned off for other
after the ordinance is approved. No, and that's a change. After the ordinance is approved, correct me if I'm wrong, Yuri. If you approve the ordinance, whatever dollar value you approve, that money has to be set aside only for growth-related projects.
Yeah.
We cannot grab that money to overlay an existing street.
Mm-hmm. And they have to be used within 6 years as well?
6 years, right.
6 years, but not specifically
for the project.
To each project.
Gotcha.
We amass the money, and then we look at the six-year tip.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next project.
Well, but you can also bond, correct?
You can always bond.
You use can that. Do a bond. Get a project. Let's say you've got a $2 million project, and you want to do it right now. You only have $500,000 in the fund. You can say, we're going to bond the entire $2 million and pay over the next 20 years for that project out of traffic mitigation fees.
If we could justify that, yes, and if you approved it.
No. I'm just throwing the possibility out there.
You could have projects on here like Second Avenue. Growth-related, you could potentially still have that project on here and keep getting the funds back for it until the city is paid up.
Got it.
Okay, we're back to Goodrich, Feria, Zimmerman, Mutchler.
Two questions. My first one is kind of tags along with what Councilmember Hansen was saying. I thought we were talking only like $14 million for Thornton, just for over the freeway, over the railroad tracks. How do we go from 14 to 22?
All the way to this one.
Actually, it's
15% of the rest of it for feasibility. And so 15% of whatever that difference is does add up to whatever.
Well, what he's trying to say is he thought the project to go to the flyover was only about $14 million. How did we go to 14 to a total project cost of 37? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, $14 million was just over the railroad. It was not over the railroad.
Right.
No, that's what I meant. You know, we were talking about just going over the. I thought it was over the railroad and down the roundabout.
But the 14 was just the bridge.
Just the bridge over the railroad tracks.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The total is 37, right? The total.
That's
yes.
Over the
well, that's over the federal.
No,
that's
no.
A federal
yes,
project,
man.
Well, okay, I hope so.
Bridge over BNSF.
It says
and
I.
Yeah, 37 is all the way over to Portal. And then you take out, then you back it out
to
the Newkirk Road.
I guess I'm, I need to jump in. I think I'd like to see just over the railroad tracks and start collecting for that. That seems possibly feasible.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about that
fund 60% of it.
Yeah. Development along I-5 would do the road from the roundabout up. Because they have all that vacant land in there. If somebody comes in and wants to plop something in there, they're going to have to build a road. Yeah. Somebody's going to have to build a road up there for them. And then all we were really looking at is the part over the railroad track, which was an estimate of $14 million.
Of course, the developer will tell you that's the chicken and the egg. Do over the railroad, and I'll do the development down the road.
There you go.
Because I won't do it before, because he wants the traffic by. Mm-hmm.
The other question I have is on this Appendix A sheet that's in the council packet, the other one here that needs a magnifying glass really to read.
The color view, yeah.
What criteria was used to decide if a project was a yes or a no? Because like here, like I-7, Maine and LaBounty is a no. But yet, if growth occurs down anywhere off of LaBounty or down south of LaBounty in that intersection, it impacts that intersection. So I don't understand, you know, why that would be a no or some of these other ones are no's and versus yeses.
Okay, and I think I was looking at
this sheet here.
Yeah, the bigger sheet.
The bigger sheet.
Yeah, like the second page or third page of the packet.
Got it.
Yeah, while yours looking at
page 66 in here.
Probably two things that I could think of. One of them is, and we covered a little earlier, if there's a
right after E.
If there's a current deficiency, we can't pay for bringing it up to our standards. The other one is, if just natural growth triggers it, we can't put it on this list either. This has to be specific to the
creating the impact.
Yes, creating the impact.
Well, how do you define natural growth versus impact? Because housing development up on the hill could be considered natural growth, but yet they're going to have an impact on the roads.
In the case of I-7, and I expect others, this would be the similar answer, it's not adding capacity. So it's really the same as the Main Street project that we're doing right now. Really the same number of vehicles can probably drive on it now as compared to the future. We're adding it so maybe it's safer, we have sidewalks and all that. That's what something like I-7 would be, making it so it would run a little bit smoother, but there wasn't a measurable, demonstrable capacity increase. Now, once that gets on a six-year improvement list and once we have design, we may be able to say, similar to Main Street, by doing that we'll add 5%, and then we could put that in. But right now we could not make that determination that, absolutely everything has some sort of a capacity.
Which goes to your residential developer's argument that he thinks that his impact is just 20 feet from his door and then stops after that. It's like, well, no, it doesn't. You know, the houses you're building, those cars are driving somewhere.
Yeah. But then how do you differentiate going back, you know, to what's an impact and what's just natural growth?
It's the traffic model. You know, they have the computer model to see where things are anticipated to happen. It's an educated guess based on the traffic engineer's modeling of human behavior, which is imprecise.
We've got a lot of vacant land here in town for various things. You know, whatever, office buildings, houses, commercial, whatever. To me, that's a lot of that. It could be considered natural growth because it's vacant today and it's inside our city. And the hope is someday that something would go on that piece of vacant land.
Mm-hmm. Take R1 for example, Thornton Church to Vista. You're not going to squeeze another lane in there. There's just no room. You might get a turn lane in. I don't think there's even enough room for a turn lane for that. So how could that be a growth-related one? And all of that road is just needs to, you know, reconstruct and bury the
Eastern.
Vista
to Thornton, that's where you're squeezed.
Yeah, you know, you're going to get a sidewalk in there and bury the open trench on the one side, and you're not going to get capacity, but yet that's one of the growth-related ones that we have checkmarked as yes, 100%.
Because it includes a traffic light, intersection improvements.
Intersection. Well, I see partial then. Not $1.7 million for a traffic light. I can see a partial, but...
Okay, are you done?
Yeah, I'm just more confused now than I was.
Tough decision.
The thing is, too, that you've had Appendix A for at least a month now. And we've asked for the feedback, and it's unfortunate if this is when we're getting it, when it's...
No, I'm not that. I'm just, when I saw this short list, and then I was looking at, comparing it to the other list here, that's when I wondered, asked the question, well, what criteria, went from one to the other, and,
It has to be growth-related. Again, if it's an existing deficiency, then it doesn't count, only to the extent that it increases capacity.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like the more information we have, then the more questions it generates as we start to understand things more. Hopefully this is kind of quick, but so the 2604 is currently based off of the information that's on this one here. So as time goes on and you reevaluate the six-year plan and things come off of here, things go on there, then that number changes, that 2604 will change based on that.
Never going
yes.
Along with cost of...
Yes.
Living adjustment. Right, but it's never going to go down. I mean, I don't know. I mean, could a future council come on here and go, you know what? We vote to completely scratch the Thornton thing. Then it would go down,
Yeah, you're right.
But I'm assuming that usually it keeps on going. Things get added to it. Do things ever really come off the list?
It certainly could.
Yeah, sure.
When you complete them.
If growth happens something in a direction else. Other than something what you're else. Predicting, kind of?
Or you do the project, it'll come off the list.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
But and for instance too that there, let's say as a result of the planned action, a Main Street improvement is identified that everybody is in love with. Maybe that improvement makes it so one of these other improvements, I'm not saying Thornton, okay. is no longer necessary.
Was that it for you?
Yeah.
Council Person Zimmerman, very patiently waiting.
Yes, Mr. Z, I was at the end. It's okay. But I understand what. And I feel what Mel is talking about, being 12 years talking about this thing as far as the getting us over to tracks with Thornton. And a lot of people never knew that the Thornton was actually, was available for people to get across to see your friends down the motorcycle, Bill. But I still think we need to have a big chunk of change sitting there. It's building money because a lot of these projects, they require some sort of matching aspect if it's going, and I see that if it goes all the way.
If you're committed to doing 100%, it's not there's no match.
Well, the way I see it, if this 59% is up.
That's 59. That's just the railroad flyover.
Yeah, just wait.
That's 100% of the railroad flyover.
Yeah, but I mean,
for match, you mean if we
not
go
not
for future
to know
plans.
What's going to yeah. having a perfect crystal ball to see what's going to go on in
sure.
10 years or so. But and also, I was talking with Councilman Mutchler this morning. And we were talking about this very same issue. We were talking about that piece of property down the flyover. And we started talking about, this and talk about impact. Well, there's something else that he brought up. I go, whoa. This could, have unintended good reference for us and documentation if there's a idea of impact of coal trains coming through there. And all of a sudden, it ups the... We have some good numbers here. I know it's not but it's kind of a growth-related thing. At least we have this documentation to go after, the railroad people, the federal people, whoever says, wait a second, you seriously impacted us. And that's why we have this $37 million project that we need this money for.
Because of the Second Avenue.
It's the Second Avenue. The Second Avenue crossing.
Yeah, when Pioneer Plaza did their EIS, the county asked us, and we did actually go much further afield than the city. We studied intersections going all the way out to the guy for that very reason.
Yeah.
Because you need to determine what the impacts are, just not in the artificial limits of a city or the limits of an industrial project out at Cherry Point, but really how it affects the entire transportation system. So it's conceivable that with the SSA Marine, through the impact statement that there could be, or there probably should be, some analysis of the traffic impacts on Ferndale and on I-5. We know right now that Grandview fails because of the refinery traffic. Now, we're not going to be able to have SS Marine fix that because it's already failed.
Now, I may have asked this a couple of meetings ago, but somewhere in here, is there the latecomers type of grievance? For something we've got on here and they come back later? Or
because these projects are identified in the comprehensive plan, we are able to then possibly consider latecomers agreements where if a project came in and if we said, oh, you tripped this switch, now you need to complete this project, we can really, we can't do the same thing,
but in all effect, we're doing that in some cases. So
it becomes more difficult to insist on a latecomer's when we don't have a project on there. So, and another example, like for sewer, let's say that a development comes in, they only need to put in a 6-inch sewer line to fit their own development or their own impact. But we know that behind them, there's this property and this property and this property. Through SEPA, their impact is only a 6-inch. That's all that they need to do. But if in the comprehensive plan, it shows a 12-inch, we can say, you need to put in that 12-inch line. Yeah, it's bigger than yours, but through latecomers, you can have it offset the difference. Only by having these projects in the comp plan can we require that a development put in more than they would otherwise need to. And then
they get reimbursed over time?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Councilperson Metzler.
Director Burnett, my eyes are getting close, focused on a 2-point font finally here. So the 59% of the $637 million, we get our $22 million, and that is the cost to get us to the coal, to the roundabout. Is that what that number is? Yeah. I'm taking me a while to catch up with this year.
The $22 million would get you to the roundabout plus 15.15%. For the feasibility analysis of the flyover.
Okay, and that's the 59% there. So my question is, of the 2604, if for some reason we struggle with that Thornton, in fact, that's not realistic to do, what is that 2604? I'm not necessarily saying I support lowering it, but what would that become then? Because that is such the lion's share of this impact fee.
Well, and I should say,
am I looking at that the wrong way when I said
it is the largest project, certainly. But before I answer that, one of the things, I was talking to the Council of Governments, who's also looking at it, and they look at all the projects that all the other jurisdictions are proposing. They said of any project in any jurisdiction in all of Whatcom County, Thornton has the biggest impact. It is the project that gets the most done of all of the projects in Bellingham, unincorporated Whatcom County.
If we do that, that does make a difference. What you're saying.
It makes the biggest difference of any project.
Because I have to accept that in faith, because it's hard to see it.
Absolutely.
I mean, I accept what you're saying, but it's hard to see it.
As far as the question about Thornton, it is the most significant project, and we asked Transpo, what if Thornton was reduced so that, let's say, instead of 59.2%, which is what we're showing, what if we reduced it down to 51% of the project total? That would cut us down to $2,400. For the impact fee if we reduced it down.
Thank you. And that doesn't seem like much of a drop. And that's why I asked you about the hypothetical, the total impact on Ferndale Station. That's only about $10,000 difference.
It would not be a significant.
It would not
well,
be.
Well, depending on what side of it.
And my narrative in this thing, we talked about this the other day, is that philosophically it seems to me council's headed in a direction where we recognize this could be a burden to your local developers. And this philosophically, and however, having said that, and affordable for the big guys, but having said that, I think for a long time we've not been able to pay for our roads. We've not been able to do improvements because we've allowed a lot of development to take place that hasn't paid their fair share of impact. And that's kind of the narrative that I've come to in this situation, and that if people are going to come in, they're going to cause impact, they need to help pay for it. And this seems to me like a reasonable number, especially when we started at $3,800, I believe, at one time. Got it down to $2,800, and now you're down to $2,604, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay, I'm going to go Councilperson Hansen, and then I think I'll write down your question. We'll have a discussion in regular council. We have 10 minutes before regular council. So go with Councilperson Hansen, and then I'll cut it off.
Keep it short.
Well, I just wanted to clarify one more time, because there seems to be some confusion at the table exactly what this Thornton Road figures mean. The 59, which is a reduction from 60, that gets you 100% of the Thornton flyover down to the roundabout. It does not get you across the freeway.
Gotcha.
Okay?
It says it.
It's and not what it says.
No, but that's the total figure. That's the 37,800,000.
And we're only going to fund 59% of it.
And the 59 or the 60% of that is getting is getting across the railroad and out to the roundabout. It does not cross the freeway. And I still come back, and we can muddle this in our heads. What happened to the $14 million? The $14 million that we were told, that's just the bridge.
Just
does not include the road or the upgrade of the road up to.
The approach and the, and the engineering of it and the design of it. That was just a construction cost.
And the clarification I was going to, it's nearly 100%, if not, it's about 99% of the total cost is embedded in the fee of 2604 of the Thornton Road flyover over the railroad down to Second Street.
Down to Second.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, let's go an 8-minute break.
Okay.
6 o'clock start.
And we'll be revisiting this.
Mm-hmm. Yuri, keep those figures. I'm studying my agenda to make sure it's all right. And quite honestly, I'm just treading water. You ready? Okay, close. So I'm going to study my agenda a couple more seconds here while these people are there, waiting for a high school student to stand up and do a singing rendition of America the Beautiful.
Public comments. Public comments.
Public comments.
I'm going to introduce you.
Yeah, no, let's public comments will be afterwards, so we're close.
We're ready.
Yeah. We're going to do the consent first.
What's that?
You're going to put us on now, or you can
yes, you are first on the agenda. So, without further ado, do you want to adjust that picture?
There we go.
All right.
Maybe we could get a projector mounted to the ceiling so we wouldn't have to deal with this.
But the guy being cut on the top.
And then when we move to Pioneer Pavilion, we'll have professional stuff. Manually wheeled.
Is that where we're moving to?
That's great.
Okay, I would first, I guess you're going to do the introduction, so I'll introduce our police chief, Michael Knapp.
Good evening, Council. It's a real privilege for me this evening to introduce two professionals with whom I work on the Domestic Violence Commission, along with the mayor who serves on that commission. I would like to tell you before we give this presentation a little about what domestic violence is about, and I say that also for the high school students that are here as well. The domestic part of domestic violence has to do with the relationship between the perpetrator and the victim, often spouses, former and present, but they can be domestic partners and they can be dating partners, 16 years and older, and there are some other groups, but that's the majority. The violence part is the assaultive part, the injury or placing another person's fear of injury, that's the violence part. It happens last year about 4 million times reported in the United States. In Whatcom County last year, there were 1,300 criminal offenses. Three of them resulted in murder. One out of four women will have experienced domestic violence sometime in their life. And one in five high school students will have experienced domestic violence by a dating partner in their life. One of the principal causes for admission to an ER for a woman is that it's an injury related to domestic violence. It's an underreported crime because it often occurs in the sanctity of the home, behind walls, away from the sights and sound of neighbors, but not from the children who witness it and who carry those images for the rest of their life. How important it is to have a group of professionals like Juliet Thompson, the program coordinator, and Susan Marks, the executive director of the Domestic Violence Commission, who are about the education and the prevention of this national tragedy. So it's a real privilege for me to serve on that commission and to introduce these two wonderful women who will tell you about what's happening here in Whatcom County. I could take this with you and you'd be lost.
Don't take my notes. Okay, so I'm Susan Marks. I'm the director of the Domestic Violence Commission.
And I'm Juliet Thompson. I'm the program coordinator of the commission.
And Mike did a wonderful introduction, so I can just get my introduction page. Chief Knapp, I meant. So just a little bit about the Domestic Violence Commission. It was formed in 1998, but it was a joint resolution between the city of Bellingham and Whatcom County. And then resolutions of support were passed by the cities of Blaine, Everson, Ferndale, Linden, and Sumas in 2006 to support the Domestic Violence Commission. And our mission is to provide leadership in the community's efforts to prevent and reduce domestic violence. And the idea really behind the commission is to have a government, a body appointed by the government to look at the issue of domestic violence throughout the county and respond at a level of public officials and people who are community leaders. And so a lot of our support comes from all of the cities and Whatcom County, and that's our financial support as well. And the city of Ferndale has been very generous in supporting us both philosophically and financially. It worked the last time. I'll just.
Is the projector.
Okay. Okay. Neck.
Good job.
Well, I'll just keep telling you a little about the DV Commission. It's fine. We kind of have some key things about the Domestic Violence Commission. One is, as I mentioned, it's really about using the influence and resources of the people on the commission. Generally, the people who serve on the commission are people who are heading up organizations, agencies, businesses. So they're people who really have a sphere of influence in their realms. We also are looking at systems level change. We don't do any direct service to victims. The idea is to change systems that respond to victims. There are wonderful domestic violence victim services in Whatcom County, and we don't want to step in their area. We want to change all the systems, including civil and criminal justice systems, healthcare systems, social service providers, any system that, that can interact with victims. And then we look at community-based solutions. So what are solutions that at the community level can make a change for the way that victims are served and offenders are served as well? And that last bullet point, the victim safety and offender accountability, that really is the bottom line of everything that we try to do. We want to make systems and communities more safe so that victims are safe and get the services they need so the offenders are held accountable for their crimes. Our DV Commission is highly represented by people from the City of Ferndale, including Mayor Gary Jensen, Chief Mike Knapp, Superintendent Linda Quinn, and Pat Buchinski, who is a resident of Ferndale and is the Women's Ministry Manager at Agape House in Bellingham, are all DV Commission members. Other people on the commission include the Whatcom County Sheriff, the Whatcom County Prosecutor and Public Defender, the Police Chief from the City of Bellingham. We have the Administrator from Department of Social and Health Services, both the Child Protection Services and the Community Service Office. And then we have some business leaders from Hagen, from Western Washington University, and then different, both of the domestic violence organizations, Women Care Shelter and Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Services. Their executive directors sit on the Domestic Violence Commission, and Nikki Finkbonner, who's the director of LUMMI Victims of Crime, sits on the commission. So we have a lot of community leaders, excuse me, on the commission. Next. So some of our accomplishments over the years, I just kind of put up a few. One is our safety and accountability audits. We've just finished our fourth safety and accountability audit. And an audit is has nothing to do with finances. It's looking at a system and how that system responds to victims of domestic violence. And so we have done an audit of the initial criminal justice process, so from the time of the 911 call through the police call, police response through jail booking. And we did an audit of that and came up with recommendations that would help victims be more safe and help victims have more access, and then, again, that would hold offenders accountable. And then we did another audit that looked at kind of the second half of the system, so prosecution and defense and sentencing, so that whole process. And, again, came up with recommendations. We identified gaps related to victim safety and offender accountability. And then we did an audit. Actually, the City of Blaine asked us to do an audit of their entire system through the city, and so we did an audit of theirs. And then we just recently completed an audit of the civil order for protection process, and the City of Ferndale's Police Department participated in that related to the serving of orders and enforcement of orders. And we just came out with that report last week and had some recommendations for all of the participating agencies. We also have, we're one of only two counties in the state that have recognized really the importance of ensuring that perpetrators are not armed. Firearms is kind of the weapon of choice of perpetrators. It's the primary way that when women are killed by an intimate partner, it's overwhelmingly people use firearms. And so we have a protocol for our criminal justice professionals to use and for victim service agencies to use to help identify perpetrators that would have access to firearms so that we can try to disarm perpetrators who are convicted of a domestic violence crime or who have an order for protection against them. We have a we worked with Child Protective Services to come up with a protocol for when child maltreatment and domestic violence are both present, because a lot of times perpetrators of domestic violence are also perpetrating child abuse against their children, and also it's extremely difficult for children to watch violence in their home even if they're not personally being hurt. So the protocol addresses how to identify when there's domestic violence in the home, how that can be harming the children, and also to not try to hold victims for them to be punished for something that their perpetrator is doing to them or their children. And we have created a model school policy related to domestic violence so that schools can respond to domestic violence when it impacts their students or when it impacts their staff. And so that could be dating violence at the teen level, but also can be when children, younger children come to school if they have witnessed domestic violence at the home. There's a policy for how to respond to those situations. And then we've put out on an annual basis, mostly an annual basis, we've put out 8 benchmark reports which tally up domestic violence statistics in Whatcom County. So it allows us to kind of track over the years calls to law enforcement, people using victim services, people using perpetrator treatment, numbers of orders for protection filed for and granted, those types of statistics. And then we, every year, we coordinate Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is in October, and we hold a vigil to honor victims of domestic violence, and we usually do a few other awareness-raising activities in October related to that. Some of our current initiatives, one is related to domestic violence in the workplace, and what we've done is we've created a model policy and templates for employers to use related to domestic violence, and we are just starting to work with local employers to try to adapt those policies and do training with their staff on those policies and really respond to domestic violence as it impacts the workplace. And this committee, it was one of the things that Washington State did a fatality review, and one of the recommendations that they came up with was that we're really missing a key way of identifying victims, and that is through the workplace. And a lot of victims are harassed at their workplace by their perpetrators. It makes them often miss work because they have to take care of things related to their victimization, and it can also just decrease their productivity in general. And then also a lot of perpetrators use their workplace time and resources to harass and stalk and intimidate their victims, and so it's really a key place for us to be responding to both victims and offenders. We're also currently going to be working with the media throughout Whatcom County on how reporting is done of domestic violence crimes to ensure that the media appropriately identifies crimes that are related to domestic violence and then provides information on factual information on domestic violence and breaks, you know, instead of perpetrating myths that really talks about the facts of domestic violence in our county. And then anytime there's an article related to an incident of domestic violence, we are encouraging the media to list the hotline numbers for the domestic violence agencies so that a victim who reads the article or someone who reads the article would know how to get help in our community. And then we are going to be conducting our own fatality review. And the state of Washington has been doing this for about 13 years. They've been doing fatality reviews at a statewide level. But we've never done one locally, and actually no community in Washington State has done one locally. And as Mike mentioned, there have been some fatalities in Whatcom County recently. We went through many years where there were no fatalities from about 2002 through 2008. There were 0 fatalities in Whatcom County related to domestic violence. And then 2009, there were 3 fatalities related to domestic violence, and in 2010, there were 4 fatalities. And in 2009, 2 of those were here in Ferndale. So we want to do a review of those and look at the cases, look at all the places the victims looked for help, maybe all the places the perpetrators looked for help, and find out where did we miss opportunities. And it may be in the criminal justice system. It may be, it could be in a school. It could be in a church. It could be in a neighborhood. There may be a lot of places that we could then impact where we can try to ensure that we don't allow that to happen again. And then, as I just mentioned, we just released our 4th safety and accountability audit report, and we will now be working with courts and other agencies to implement some of the recommendations in that audit.
We have particular initiatives going in Whatcom County small cities. We've held a series of educational forums where last year we did one on identifying the primary aggressor and working with immigrant victims of domestic violence. And just recently, last week, had one in Ferndale on elder abuse. We offered training and technical assistance by offering sponsorship at conferences on domestic violence to small cities officers, judges, and prosecutors. And we have worked on expanding services so that there are more people present in the small cities and that people are educated in domestic violence, people who work directly with victims, including leaders, social workers, school personnel, and religious community representatives. And we continue to support the work of what's labeled there as the DVS, which is the Domestic Violence Specialist. And this is a person who works in the court systems to represent victims, and it's had a great impact. She's been doing that work since 2008. We publish an annual report for the second year in a row called Domestic Violence in the Cities of Blaine, Emerson, Nooksack, Ferndale, Linden, and Sioux, Mass. And then we've also applied for a couple of grants. Susan will tell you about those.
So this GTA 4 grant, we've actually, it's grants to encourage arrest and enforcement of protection order policies is what they're called, and they're through the Office on Violence Against Women, which is under the U.S. Department of Justice. And we have They're two-year grants, and so for 6 years, for 3 years in a row, we've received this grant to do work with the civil and criminal justice systems here in Whatcom County. We've just applied for a fourth grant. They're very sizable. Over the 6 years, we've received nearly $1 million to do work related to domestic violence here in the county. And some of that comes to the commission, and some of it we pass on to other agencies to do some of their work. And so we've applied for a fourth one, and we'll find out in September. But if we get it, we'll be doing some work related to risk assessment and really trying to identify victims who are most at risk for high lethality incidents. So that could be homicide or really high violence cases, and offenders who are most at risk for perpetrating those kinds of violence, and then providing more intensive services to those victims and perpetrators. We'll also be continuing some work related to the training and technical assistance and forums and funding and support for the domestic violence specialist position. And then we'd be looking at providing some legal advocacy on site at the Whatcom County Courthouse for victims of filing for protection orders. And then we also just applied for this grant. It's called the STEP grant. It's also through the Office on Violence Against Women. And it's for services, training, education, and policies in secondary schools. And so we actually partnered on this one with the Ferndale School District and wrote for a grant. It would be a three-year grant, and it would be about $500,000 over 3 years to work with the middle and high schools to develop services, training, education, and policies related to domestic violence, dating violence, stalking, and sexual assault. And so we're really hoping to get that grant and make an impact here with the young people in Ferndale, which we're hoping will then lead to a greater impact in the future.
This is a report that's available on our website, and you can link to it under the you can find it under the assets link. Next. So this is some statistics from the city of Ferndale that are in the report there. And so the top line, okay, so the bottom lines, the bottom group of lines is Washington State, Whatcom County. And the line that has more jigs and jags in it is the offenses per 1,000 population. The other two are trend lines. And then the top line there, the top two lines, the green line and the black line, those are the city of Ferndale. So you can see domestic violence offenses, and these are misdemeanor offenses. They are decreasing on both the county, state, and in the city of Ferndale. That's good news. But you also know that the city of Ferndale's rates are higher than county and state levels. And this is very interesting. And this is fairly typical within all of the small cities, almost all of them. So next. So these two graphs show, the first one on the left or on the top shows the populations of the small cities. So they're just relative to each other, nice relative picture of the populations. And then the other graph shows the same misdemeanor domestic violence charges in the small cities. So what you note there, what one notes is that the number of DV offenses pretty much goes along as a certain percentage of the population. Okay, so there's no big surprise there, except for when you look at Linden's, because you can see that the population of Linden does not correspond to the reporting, the number of reports of domestic violence offenses. So that's one thing that, as a commission, we can't come to a conclusion because we're not funded to do a report of that level and that kind of depth, but there are things that it indicates possibly that there's just different mechanisms working there, and we could speculate on them, but we won't do that tonight. So the next, please. There is a quote there from the Honorable Terry Lewis, the judge for Ferndale and Linden Courts, and he's talking about the domestic violence specialist. And that position started in 2008, as I mentioned, and it's really been a great boon for domestic violence cases, because victim representation isn't always possible in the way cases are prosecuted. So having an individual there who represents the victim's needs and interests and concerns in the case makes a huge difference in how the case goes. So we are looking for an ongoing mechanism Well, a mechanism that will provide sustainable ongoing support for that position. But we will also be looking to partner with the small cities in grants to create, you know, temporary funding for a year or two at a time as well. So we just have one more slide, and that's the end of our presentation. Susan, you want to finish up?
That's just our contact information. So you can, on our website, you can find our meetings are open to the public. So if anyone ever wants to attend a meeting, we're like any commission that we're open to the public. So you can find our schedule on our website. Under our assets page, you can find a lot of our policies and procedures and protocols, our safety audit reports, our data reports. And then our blog and events page, you can find, and our Facebook fan page, you can find out what's going on related to domestic violence in the county. And there's our personal contact information if you have any questions at any point or want to know more about.
Council, questions for our guests before they leave? Councilor Zimmerman?
Well, I had one. I'd probably be directed to our chief. Chief, I heard a number, so I'll ask you and see if the same number I heard. The number of 100 calls that your officers go out on, how many results, they're there because of domestic violence?
I don't know. I'll find out for you. Okay.
I heard it was like pretty high, like over 50%, like closer to 80.
I suspect not.
Okay.
We go to about 12,000 calls a year.
Okay, any other questions? Any other questions for our guests? Councilperson Mutchler?
Thank you for coming. In my work as a pastor, I tears me apart when I see this in families, and so much so that I talk about it a little bit, when I do premarital counseling. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, listening to you, would there be some material or a brochure that could be included in the application for wedding licenses? And mm-hmm. I know it's a smaller mm-hmm. segment. There's a lot of stuff that comes in those wedding packets. There's mm-hmm. stuff on AIDS and all sorts of things, and it seems like there could be some instructions in there mm-hmm. about this is not acceptable, it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting idea. You know, and one of the things we've really been talking about is reaching out more to churches and faith-based leaders, and that's a really interesting maybe way that we could partner together is to come up with something that would let people know, and I think it's a really important message for churches to be giving, is that this type of violence is not acceptable within a marriage. I think that's a really important message to be giving. So that's an interesting idea. Down.
Yeah. Okay, we'll take just a quick little break. Let them break down their equipment so they can
thank
take
you.
Their information with you. So, 1 minute.
Worried about it. Main Street is so much of our funding this year is for transit and other funds.
But I think we'll move forward.
It's probably 800 square feet.
I don't think they have an agenda.
Waiting for the council members. We got
everything but the kitchen.
Okay, so Councilperson Ingram is back. Next up is our public comment period. This is a chance for the audience to come and speak to the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. If you ever want to speak on something that's on agenda, we have a list here, but if you feel you want to get up and speak, just raise your hand and we'll get to you. We're kind of casual here. I have one person on the public comment period, but they're on Sterling Avenue, so I suspect they might want to talk about the alley closure.
Okay, so we're going to bump you to the alley closure one. So the list is open for public comment period, so we're open for anyone to come speak. We'll go on the alley closure when it comes to that item. Oh. So any other item that's not on tonight's agenda, anything's open for tonight's comment period. We have one guest. Welcome, sir.
Yeah. Might as well mention it. So I'm Norbert Roysha, 2147 Main Street, Ferndale. Recently announced a candidate for mayor. And I guess you guys have been seeing me here in and out for the last couple of years. And part of my decision to run was fostered by watching you guys debate, consult the issues, and give back to your community. And I'd like to extend a thank you for giving me the chance to see these things. And I wish the other candidates fruitful and exciting debates. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
President. Okay, anyone else on the open comment period? Seeing none? Okay, we'll move on. The consent agenda.
Make a motion to move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Okay, so motion second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Thank you, Council. Okay, next up is the public comment or the public hearing on the partial alley closure. And so we will have some comments on that. So I'll read the comments for a public hearing. Public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it is necessary that you sign up the sign-up sheet that will be available at the counter. We already have one, but if you want to speak after the one person signed up here, we'll allow it. Written comments will also be submitted to the city prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum microphone and then clearly state your name and address. If you're speaking as a representative for another person or organization, so state whether you are a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comments to 3 minutes. After all your comments are heard, if you have something to add that has not already been stated, at the discretion of the mayor, you'll be given an additional 2 minutes. There'll be no demonstration during or at the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period, the public hearing, the council staff and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. After the last person has spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter a regular session. The subject of the hearing may usually appear as an agenda item for council discussion. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding public hearings, to give every person an opportunity to be heard, and to ensure that no individuals are embarrassed by exercising the right to free speech. Now, staff will present the issue. Welcome, Katie Ratter.
Good evening, council. We're here to talk about the partial closure of the alley between Sterling and Hamlin Avenues off Main Street, and it's been discussed informally for some time about the closure of this access on Main Street. The alley is a single-lane alley. It's extremely narrow. It's 10 feet between the two new retaining wall faces, making it very difficult to access by larger vehicles. It also doesn't meet minimum design requirements as far as site distance goes. And so Public Works is bringing this issue forward to discuss formally in the form of a hearing and is making the recommendation that the alley be closed for safety reasons. Now, we have spoken to the various service groups. We contacted Fire District 7, Gary Russell, to ask whether or not that alley is used for emergency services, and he indicated that it is not and has not been. We also contacted Sanitary Service, and they do not use that alley for access for garbage pickup either. If you notice in your staff report, as far as the site triangle goes, I took some photos. Generally, the way these photos are situated, I took some measurements and averaged the average distance between where a person sits in a vehicle and the front bumper of the vehicle. And if a car were to try to exit the alley at this location without obstructing the sidewalk in any way, the photos show how far you can see up and down the street. So we've considered a couple of alternatives. One would be to leave the southernmost portion of the alley open to vehicular traffic and or revise the alley to one-way travel. And Public Works is not recommending either of those two options. We're recommending full closure for safety issues. The problem with leaving the alley open, again, you know, with cars trying to exit the alley, it causes a potential conflict for pedestrians on the sidewalk, as well as problems seeing up and down the roadway for oncoming traffic. We're also not recommending that the alley be closed to single lane or one-way traffic, I guess, just because of the difficulties in trying to enforce that. We're concerned that traffic will, you know, not heed that one-way lane marking and still cause a safety concern. As far as notifying the public regarding this potential closure, we've Sam's done the public notices in the newspaper, and we've also taken that a step further ahead, and Public Works Department has sent out letters to adjacent property owners and residents on the alley.
Okay, questions to staff. Councilperson Feria, then Goodrich, and Zimmerman.
It sounds like you're talking about closing it completely is what I'm hearing. Does that mean on Main Street side and on the Guinevere side?
No, I'm sorry. The closure would be just on the...
Only the Ballards, I don't know how to pronounce that right, on the Main Street side. So people can still enter from the Guinevere side and access their property and go back out through Guinevere. Okay, just wanted to make sure that
did sound confusing.
It's not what it said in here, but that's how it was being phrased tonight, so I was confused.
I apologize.
It said in here that side would be open, but that's not how she phrased it.
A question I had over the weekend, how does this closure of the alley affect the rezone that we've done there on those properties on Main Street with future development? Are they not going to be allowed to use the alley there, or would it have to be widened, or what impact, if any, is that going to have on the zoning change there?
We'll go to our planning director for that answer.
At this point, we would not guess that it would have a significant impact, since development has not yet been proposed with the exception of a fourplex there. It wouldn't impact their access. They would continue to use the alleyway, and that work status has just been discussed. When new proposals are made, they would need to take into account that they would not be able to utilize that to the full extent that they might have otherwise been able to.
So we're going to make that part of the development, that eventually, as Main Street develops on that side of the street, sometime the fact that alley would disappear as far as new development goes, and just it would end further north? Or can a new development use that alley or incorporate it by widening it or something?
Yeah, we're not proposing vacating the alley. We're talking about closing the southernmost portion of the alley to vehicular traffic only, so we'd install two bollards at the
I'm
end.
I'm talking about today. I'm looking at down the road,
right,
2 or 3, 5 years when somebody, you know, buys those properties and decides to put their five-story, SAM equivalent on the other side, the north side of the street. What effect is this going to have on that development, or will it?
Right, we can't. There are existing utilities in that alley. There's not only a storm sewer line, there's a sanitary sewer line, not at the exact location where we're proposing the closure today, and there's also a water line. So in order to vacate that and then allow that alley to be used potentially for future development, there'd have to be some sort of plan made, or, you know, we'd have to do something with the existing city utilities there before that kind of thing could occur.
Councilperson Zimmerman was next. And Mutchler, then Malkezy.
Now, you said it's 10 feet between the two cement sections. What's the whole width of the right-of-way?
That's a good question, and I'd have to look that up.
Okay, you can get back to me on that. That's important. Of course, we have the engineer who originally designed it back there, Luis. What's the width of the right-of-way of that alley?
I'd have to check. I don't know right off the top of my head.
Wow. Okay. Do. Stump the stars here. So, and the other thing is, you know, there's gravel. I mean, the asphalt only goes so far up that incline. Then you got gravel, and I saw you put a little, kind of like a little dam there where it catches it and guides it down into the water. I just think the whole thing, we need to do more than just put a couple bollards there. And also, you think about the safety of kids riding bicycles down there. They're going to go right zipping down there. And, you know, it's also an issue. So I would say that you'd want to, you know, close it off. You know, you maintain your utilities, but just build it up and make it usable for those two people on the end, because they still got to back up and do their vehicles and everything on it. But someone coming down that alley thinking it's there, getting halfway down there and seeing down the little hill and say, oh, it's bollards, and then having to back up, it's going to look like hell from the street side. I mean, we put that much money into making it look good, and then all of a sudden, this is the part that, oh, deletive part of the project where we realized, oh, we're at the very end of it, how can we make it look better out of make a golden goose out of that cracked egg that we have now?
So you're not against it. You want to see a better thing than
I'm all in favor. You know, closing it off, but let's put a little bit of money into it and make it look better than just a couple of wooden ballers that might get snapped off like they do in other places in our community. I mean, it just needs to look good. It needs to function well, and it's going to take a little bit more than just a couple of, cut off telephone poles blocking traffic from going through there. So,
okay, before we go to Councilperson Mutchler, the staff would always love to answer Council's questions. You go to committee and you discuss this. This was discussed in the Public Works Committee, and then you get your packets on Friday. So at any time during that process, the Council would love to come to Council and not be stumped.
Right.
So if you have questions that you could ask ahead of time for council or staff to bring information, they would love that. The staff doesn't like to be stumped in council. So
yeah, I was surprised.
If you can give them the courtesy of asking questions ahead of time so they can bring questions to council, they would appreciate that. Councilperson Muxler.
This is kind of a generic, still learning the ropes. I've never been asked to close a street before question. When we do something like this, and I'm not saying this is little, it's a big deal for people in that neighborhood, is this always required by ordinance when we close something as small as an alley? It is required. The council has to approve it. Thank you.
Okay. Councilperson Malpezzi and then Ingram.
How did it get designed to not meet the minimum design standards? I guess that's one of my questions. Why didn't we catch this earlier?
In order to meet minimum design standards, there would have to be a significant amount of right-of-way purchased or obtained in order to make that minimum site distance.
Okay. I guess I'm still wondering why we didn't design it to meet the minimum design standards. I thought that's kind of the purpose of design work is to meet those design standards.
I'll let the public works director answer that.
Yeah, because, I mean, it is just an alley, and as far as volume of traffic, pretty minimal. There was already, some existing conditions there that we just did not address as part of this project. We didn't address improving the alley access. And I think that as far as the issue on the site distance, I think that's been around for a number of years. And so through this project, we have the opportunity to take a look at that.
I believe what that neighborhood platted in 1948, I think I'm right on 1948.
Do not know. Yeah, so it's been there for a while.
1948, it probably was a wide enough alley.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Person Ingram?
Yeah, Acadia. I like the pictures. I'm all in favor of doing this. I kind of tend to lean toward Lloyd's aspect of let's make it look kind of nice. I wouldn't mind having just enough width for a person to get through, but not necessarily a bicycle without walking it through. I'd like to, at your convenience, get together with you one of these days, because I've got about 6 intersections that I'd like to address with you that have sight distance issues big time. And being a motorcycle rider, when you have to get 3/4 of the way on into a traffic lane before you can see around the corner, it's really scary. Yeah.
Okay, any other council comments before we move to the public hearing portion? Seeing none. Okay, we have one person on the public comment period. I'll have you come forward and
have your name and address. Katie, I'm sure we'll have you back. Thank you so far. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Winella Berner, and my own personal opinion is that I don't too much care one way or the other, but I have come as a representative for a couple of the neighbors who cannot be here. They're concerned about this apartment complex going in there, and the fact that we would have problems with people turning around in the yards to go back out. Right now, while this has been closed and all this has been going on, I have a disabled daughter, and we have to get her close to our back door. And so the neighbors have graciously allowed us to use their yard to turn my son-in-law's car around so he can get in there. My younger daughter comes up, and she blows her horn before she goes out onto the walkway, which I think is a pretty good idea. But getting down and seeing has always been a problem, that if you blow your horn, any pedestrians or kids on skateboards or bikes know that you're coming. As far as width goes, garbage trucks used to go up that alley. A girl that I drove school bus with brought a school bus up the alley, one of the smaller buses. So basically we're concerned with also if this apartment goes in there. There's limited parking for the number of units that would go in, and these people are going to need to find places to park, which we are concerned for perhaps our yards being blocked off or our entrances into our garages being blocked off. Another thing there is, what about visitor parking? Because there's not a lot of room on Hamlin. And I don't care if people park behind my house as long as they're out of there by a decent hour. But if you have a whole bunch of people, you have overnighters, you have a large party or something, we're going to have a problem there with traffic congestion, and that is a concern for all of us. Thank you.
Just wait. Councilor, any questions for Mrs. Berner about the alley? So we'll go with Councilperson Hansen first.
It's as much a question for Yori as it is.
Yeah.
And that is, don't we require two parking places per apartment unit?
Yes, sir.
And not, that's off-street and out of the alley?
Yes, sir.
So there's already, there will be eight parking places constructed for that. They have to.
Well, the way it's set up here on the paper that Irma Moyes got from the city hall is there is a carport with four spaces, and then on Hamlin, he is requesting three parking spaces on Hamlin, which gives seven.
Planning director?
I believe that that might not be the most current approved plan. I believe that was submitted to the city at one point, but our associate planner told them that they did not have the opportunity to park on Hamlin, which would be on-street parking, but instead they would need to park in the back, where I believe they've converted the carport to six vehicles, with one vehicle on either side still off-street parking, for a total of eight.
Okay. I would like to see cars to be able to come up that alley, but not necessarily go down. My neighbor and I were talking out in the yard, and some kid put his foot on the gas pedal up on Washington, and by the time he got down to the end of the alley, he was going at a pretty good rate of speed and did not stop and just popped right out onto Main Street. And my concern is that there could be someone killed. So when you mention stopping this further up or putting a notice or blocking that in such a way, but I also walk my dog and come up the alley for exercise, so I appreciate if we could leave a space for
so
people to come
the, the bollards, how many bollards would it be? Okay, two bollards? So.
Yeah, that would give us access.
Okay, and I think one more question for you. No, you're all right? Any more questions for
Councilperson Zimmerman. Here's just a general question. Where is this fourplex on this little map you gave us? Where is that going to be located?
Right next to the Anderson House, and the lady who owns Anderson House is here, too. So
right behind Anderson House, fronting Hamlin.
Fronting Hamlin, okay.
Well, and then it connects, and the lot goes all the way.
Did you want this?
Do you want to give that up? Or?
Yeah. I can get another one if she wants.
or an up-to-date one.
Yeah.
Okay, she picked it up today. Any other questions for this person? Okay, Tina, thank you very much.
Okay.
Anyone else? Great. Come forward. Welcome.
We have the same drawing.
Name and address, please.
My name is Denise Santamarina, and I live at 2140 Main Street. And I'm so glad that all of this has come up because I am the house on the corner where the wall has gone on around and all of the construction has been going on, and oh my God, while it's been very welcome improvement, the retaining wall has been wonderful, but there was a fire. And when this started going on, I started thinking that the wall that was going on the Hamlin side seemed to be going back further than the original drawings. And I thought, oh my gosh, if there's a fire, that might be an issue. Well, there was. Fire trucks could get in, but here's my problem. The new wall, and I'll get to the alleyway, along Main Street is wonderful, and it turns onto Hamlin, and that's great, but it goes all the way back to the length of my house, which leads me into the next property, the fourplex that's trying to go into where my parking lot now is. So I guess originally this house, well, this house is used to have 100 acres, so it's whittled down to a piece of property, which is now four city lots, I believe. So mine sits on two, and then this parking lot is on the other two. When I first looked at this house, it was contingent on what happened with that property, and so I actually am purchasing it as a lease option with the Harangs, who own the building. So they are in. They were here earlier, but they left. So this piece of property, let me address the alleyway first, and I didn't ever think that the alleyway was a safe way to go in or out. It's just there's no visibility. And she's right too in mentioning that there are a lot of people who walk their dogs and walk up and down there, and bikes do go in and out, and yeah, people will dart through there, and if there are ballards at the end, yeah, it could be a problem too. I think the whole thing just needs to be addressed, and in answer to how big it is, the opening comes this way and then sort of closes in like that. And I would say if that's 10 feet between those two, there's maybe a foot on each side. It's very narrow. But if he goes in and builds a fourplex in there, even with the updated parking, he told me that he was going to put the parking on the alleyway. My question is, don't you need an in and an out? I mean, isn't that just a safety issue? I would just assume there was. But the fence, the new fence that goes through the whole Main Street side and the Hamlin side, leave no entrance to my house, no way to get to the house from both of those streets. My driveway is in the parking lot area where he wants to build. So if we close off the alleyway and we close off the driveway, then I have no in or out or just walls all the way around the house and no parking. So if he extends the carport and then there are plenty of parking for this piece of property, then there is absolutely no way in or out of my property.
So it appears the parking issue is a different issue in terms of relationship as Mr. Unruh's development. And so now we're discussing the closing of the end of the alley. So I think probably planning, do you want to make an appointment with her and talk about the parking issue because it's a separate issue, and then questions about the alley. So you're agreeing, or you're agreeing that end of the alley should be closed, or?
I think it is a safety issue. If it were completely closed off, I think it would probably be safer. Like he said, if there was a person could go through, but maybe not bikes, it would probably be okay. But it's going to have to be improved to where it's visible from both sides before you get right there, because it is a dip. Very much is a ditch. And the parking for the building that's going to go in behind us, if they have carport there, there really is not enough room on the drawing for these guys to pull into a carport and back out into the alleyway without either going into somebody else's property behind them. So I think the carport issue is still an alley issue.
So, Yori, do you have her contact information so she can have a separate meeting on the parking issue of the – is it a fourplex?
It is a fourplex.
Okay, so Yori will get information on that, and then stay for a second. Let's give her a second so she can give Yori the information, and then we'll go to questions. So we'll give her a second here.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
She lives in the old Anderson house?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you for preserving part of Heritage.
Now, let's see. In terms of hands, I was watching her, so Connie, one. Anyone else? And Paul, two. Okay.
My question isn't necessarily
for
her. So, but it might be for you. I was just curious, the timing of making a decision, is it important that it happen? Does it have to happen tonight? Question number one.
Okay.
Because hearing the concerns here, or, you know, maybe having more information about how that fourplex is laid out, or, you know, the concerns of how it necessarily gets closed off on the end, I didn't know if some of those things needed to be addressed before making a decision. I mean, it sounds like people are in agreement about it getting closed off, but it's just, I guess my concern is making sure some of her issues are addressed, or perhaps the signage issues, or,
so I'll throw that question. Katie, do you want to ask that question, or do you, Janice, want to? Katie? Okay, take a stab.
You know, I don't think there's any pressure to make the decision tonight. Really, it's we're looking at it like it's been an ongoing discussion for quite some time, and the alley has been inaccessible during construction. There was a retaining walls that were built there. The footings span the alley. Traffic hasn't had access. It's like it's a change in the area anyway. Maybe now is the opportune time because people are aware that things are different. So no, I don't think there's any sort of urgent urge to get that done. The other part of your question was?
Well, it's like I like the direction I'm hearing it go of closing it. It's just making sure before something gets, the ordinance, I guess, got passed, that things were cleared up with what has to happen for maybe where the Anderson house is located or maybe how the fourplex is laid out. I don't know if that plays into having this decision being made. Quite the jumble here, or the discussion about where the signage is, or whether it's bollards, or whether it's something else. I don't know if any of that has to necessarily get played out before the ordinance happens, saying yes, let's close it, and administration can figure out the details of maybe the best way to close it off. I don't know if that can happen.
Well,
does that make sense?
I guess I'm going to go to Yori. I mean, if you know the alley is closed, does that assist you in the planning process for the fourplex, or does it make a difference?
I haven't had a chance to – I did not anticipate that the discussion would go to this extent. I would guess that the review of the fourplex accommodated the turning movement so it would not negatively impact the residents and that they would utilize that northern access up to Guinevere out. So I would believe that it would probably be with more information, no changes would need to be made and everything's good. Since I haven't looked at it close enough lately, I can't say 100%.
Okay. Councilperson Goodrich?
Two questions. One's for you. I just want to make sure that I heard correctly. If that fourplex proceeds with the parking as currently planned, your building becomes 100% landlocked. Thank you. Yori? We could not, as a city, allow that to happen, could we? If you answer yes, I'm going to faint. Because I'll hold him. Because it's absolutely unconscionable to me that we would approve a building plan for somebody that would make somebody else's home totally inaccessible. I just can't imagine we would allow that to happen.
My understanding of the lots, and this, again, is something that we can discuss with her, is that the lots, one of them is north of the Anderson house, so that the development is proposed entirely north of the Anderson house and its properties, in which case the Anderson house would continue to have access to that alleyway. And I think discussing with her, we could see if that is the case or not. That was my understanding.
But no, but that's not, that would be the
I've got a little bit of down. Background on that because this came up earlier, and right now the Anderson House has a if you look at the ordinance and the photo attached to the ordinance, there's a large gravel area just north of that property. Now,
it's next to the old garage.
This is the property line right there.
Right. There is access. It's narrow. I don't know the exact dimension. The alley grades up, so there's kind of a steep grade, but there is a portion that's leveled that you can access from the alley, whether or not it's bollarded off at the south end. You can access it with a vehicle. Between there's at least a car width, driving lane width worth of access to the Anderson House property.
Well,
Ryan and I discussed that.
And you still have legal ingress on Tamar?
I don't believe that there's ever been vehicular access off of Tamar.
Yes, there has been.
Because my
probably not in your time. In my time, yes.
My concern is
just a second.
Not prior to the project, immediately prior to the project.
Correct. So in the past there was access off Hamlin into a garage. Councilperson Ingram?
No, my concern is that it's not just a little narrow strip for a compact car to squeeze into. But what if this lady wants to move in the next 5-10 years? What's she going to do with a moving van, for crying out loud? Is she going to, if she has no access to a reasonable sized vehicle, she can't even do a shuttle move. You know, it's like that's
you can get a car in,
on
but
Main
you
Street.
Can't get,
you can't get a car out.
It's,
yeah.
it's my opinion that the alley closure doesn't impact that specific access. What impacts that access is whether or not the fourplex develops because right.
Yeah. But I'll go to Councilperson Goodrich, and then I'll go to Hanson. Sorry.
To answer a question earlier, if I'm reading this right, maybe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. On this drawing, it says alley 17.5 ROW. Does that mean the alley is 17 and a half feet wide? And if it is, why do we only have a 10-foot entrance?
Because the alley was built in 1948.
Well, look at the cut.
I was just curious. You know, they asked the question. If you got us, where did that other 7 feet?
We'd have had to cut those banks out.
Yeah, that's right.
The alley width, the existing banks prior to the construction of the Main Street project, the alley width, you know, bottom of bank to bottom of bank, is not any much different than the retaining wall. Now, just now, it's vertical rather than a slope. So, the width of the alley driving surface is pretty much the same.
But that did answer my question. 17.5. Anyway. Councilperson Hanson.
Well, it appears to me that Mr. Unruh, the fourplex developer, has purchased some property, and there are property lines on that property. Is it my understanding that you, the owner of the Anderson House, are using his property currently for ingress and egress illegally? Okay.
That's
well, it's not an oops. It could be an oops. Your course of action, if he has every right to build on that piece of property, and I mean, he could put a fence right there and say, sorry, you know, except that you have the right. Based on what's the term? I
have? Adverse
possession. If it's been used for, it doesn't take 100 years. It only takes 10, 7 or 10. Yeah, depends on what part of the law you're looking at. But that's a legal action on your part. City gets not involved. You understand what I just?
Not
the city. The city will look at it and say, Mr. Unruh owns this property up to this point. He may build on that and do what he wants to do unless you take action to stop him legally.
So, again, counsel, that's a separate issue that is before you. Your issue before you is is the closure of the far end of the alley. Signage will be done by staff, but that's a separate issue. The issue before you is closing the alley. So any questions of these two people on relating to the closure of the alley? No? Okay. Thank you. Okay, so anyone else would like to speak from the public on the closure of the alley? No, seeing none. Okay, I'll close the public hearing portion. I'll go to questions from council. It appears in my vision that Councilperson Malpezzi beat Goodrich by a couple seconds.
Yeah.
Councilperson Malpezzi.
Well, I'm good with closing the alley. However, I'm not good with the one section two of the ordinance that says how we're going to install the bollards down at the bottom. I think we just need to maybe delete that part of the ordinance and consider passing it as is and leave it up to the discretion of staff to work it out. I like the idea of maybe putting a bollard or two up towards the top as long as it doesn't block vehicle traffic to the houses and garages and whatnot. And then down at the bottom, I was envisioning the same type of material that the railing is on, but done in a fashion like over at Central does. They have the open gate, and then they have a gate in front of the gate where you got to actually walk around the little gate. If you think on First Street on Central, they have the gates, how they're open there. It'd make it impossible for a vehicle. Okay, they used to have. Okay.
They do have it on the second.
And you can do that in a really classy, really classy-looking structure. It's called a walk-around gate.
You can make those look really and you might even be able to squeeze a bicycle through by walking it around, but you definitely can't ride it through.
So we have to wait for staff to do cost on that. We'll go to Councilperson Goodrich.
I'm in favor of closing this, but I'd also, again, like to express what Councilmember Ingram stated, that I think we need to look at other places in the city. It seems like we have just as dangerous an alley right over here where we come out on Main Street. You got parallel parking there. You got parking, pedestrians, and talk about a blind intersection. That's my question. Why is this one we need to close, but other ones we keep wide open?
Separate workshop.
I'm in support of what Mr. Councilman Malpezzi said, and that's actually I'm going to make a motion to pass the ordinance with Section 2 removed, leaving that up to some more administrative.
Oh, there was a young man in the back that had his hand up. I just didn't know whether you wanted to give him a chance to speak.
I know. It's up to you.
Was it a student that could get extra credit?
He's a student. Yeah, he gets extra credit.
Would you like to come forward and speak, or you were just blocking the sun? You can come forward and speak.
Get extra credit, man.
So you come to the podium and then name and address. Welcome.
Kid Beckstead, 1156 First Avenue. But like all the alleys around here are lying on Main Street because all the buildings and stuff. So why close one when all of them are blind?
I think we're going to look at all of them.
Yeah. Safety issues, you bet.
Yeah. Starting somewhere, I guess. Thank you, kid. Thank you. Make sure you tell your teacher to get extra credit for speaking. Okay, Councilperson Perry.
Thank you. I'd like to make a motion to pass ordinance number from Agenda Bill 1105002, with the removal of Section 2, leaving that up to administration to further look into the details of how it's going to be blocked.
Second.
Okay, been moved and seconded. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, moving forward. Next one is our well water supply project.
Transportation impact fees.
I don't want to go past that.
Skip over that.
Okay, now, before we move on, Councilman Zimmerman, you had a question. Do you want to, left over that we cut you off on in the last one, do you want to bring that question forward now?
Let's hold off. It might come up.
Okay. Mr. Burnett, it's your floor.
All right. City Council held a workshop this evening between 5 and 6 and discussed a number of issues. Just as some background, this transportation process started back in 2008 when we first contracted with the Transpo Group to update our comprehensive plan amendment for transportation, as well as our traffic impact fees and concurrency. We've updated our comprehensive plan element, which was the first time that had really been substantially updated since its inception back in the 1990s. Now the council has spent a number of study sessions and work sessions learning about this very complicated topic, getting your heads around it, as has staff, and we have come before you tonight based on the technical analysis of the Transpo Group, as well as the list of projects that were determined to be necessary in order to achieve the long-range transportation vision of the city, with a traffic impact fee recommendation of $2,604 per p.m. peak hour trip. That is based on, as I said, all of the traffic impact fee eligible projects, which are generally capacity related, with the one exception of N1, which is a Thornton Street project, which is composed of essentially two phases. One of them would be on the west side of the freeway, linking Thornton Road to 2nd Avenue. The other would be going over the freeway and linking it to Portal Way. As is currently proposed, the second phase to Portal Way would be funded at 15% of the total project, whereas the rest of the project would be funded at approximately in the high 90 percentile range, with some percentage dropped down for a total of 59% of the overall project funded by impact fees. The change that we have suggested to you tonight is adding 10% of the Main Street project, which is identified as R6. 10% of that project would be going to turn lanes. It's a complicated subject. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. We do not have a public hearing scheduled for tonight because we have not identified substantial changes that would necessitate one.
So, council questions, and we still would open up to the public if they have one comment on the agenda. So, Councilperson Goodrich?
In going through this and with some other sections and other parts of the code, I don't know if it would be advisable to staff to create a new section of the code where we list when things will be reviewed, when ordinances will come up for review. Because I noticed in reading this, there's no section here that says we review this annually or we would do this every 5 years or something like that. Or at least I didn't see it when I read through it. I know we've had other codes and things where we said, well, we need to do this on this basis, and have a central location where you can look and see, so we don't wait 5-10 years to say, oh, gee, we haven't updated this in 10 years. Maybe we should. And kind of be like a tickler file or something like that so we can keep track of these different items. But I couldn't find anything in here that said that this will be reviewed or the other than the we do the six-year tip annually update, so I don't know if we tie it to that or what, just so we don't get into this or a future council have to deal with, gee, why didn't they do this before?
Okay, further questions from council?
Well, I...
Hello?
I'm sorry.
Councilperson Ingram?
I thought we specifically addressed that at committee, that we wanted to see that in the ordinance.
When it would be
unless
updated.
I was... having hallucinations.
So this discussion, it's been brought up a few times. On
no, it's specifically related to transportation impact fees that we wanted to see in the ordinance a specific time frame where we would review this again.
And that would take, we could add that without a public hearing.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's not
changed. Another way. I kind of thought so, too. That's why I was looking for it. But then I thought, maybe it's because we did so many other things.
No, I could have sworn that we specifically addressed that in this particular time.
We talked about having it... keep up with the cost of living.
Right, let's good suggestion. It sounds like you're all there, so let's hold that in our pocket. Was that it, Councilperson Ingram?
Yeah.
Okay, Councilperson Zimmerman and then Metzler.
Well, I just wanted to review for some people in the audience or haven't been following this for a long time. This was like, was it, Greg, $250,000 study that Transpo that we paid?
I don't remember the dollar amount.
$242 million, somewhere in there. Yeah. And when you look at that bottom line, of, you know, $37 million is what we're trying to get. I'm sure it'll come back to the citizens of Ferndale some way. So, again, it's with its complexes and difficult to really get your brain around all these little numbers and projects and things. It's again, it comes down to the simplicity of here's Bellingham, here's what Linen charges. Are we going to be somewhere in the middle, or are we going to ask for a little bit more, thinking that we'll be able to adjust things as they, it gives us some negotiating room for things like the Eagle project, I would think, if they're going to be putting rain gardens in or do some of the other stuff, it gives us more room to have our planners to negotiate.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Ingram.
If there is development at I-5 and Main Street, we need another way in and out of town. And we've been talking about Thornton for a long time. It seems to me this Thornton, this is not the Flyworth Highway. This is just connecting us with 2nd Avenue. It seems like this is the best way of getting there quicker. So I'd like to make a motion today that we adopt the ordinance, Agenda Bill 11-5003, which includes the figure of $2,600 and $2,604 per trip.
Second.
Okay, we move second. Further discussion. Before we go to other questions, excellent point, Councilperson Mutchler, again noted by COG as the number one project for helping a community in Whatcom County. The number one project in helping a community in Whatcom County. So I'll go with Councilperson Hansen first, then Ferriero.
Well, as I pointed out, and you're all aware of it, so it doesn't need to be repeated, but 60% of the traffic impact fee that you're about to adopt, if you adopted the $2,600, goes to the Thornton Road. That's saying that 60% of all of our traffic problems are because we don't have Thornton Road completed. And to say that we are going to be equal to Bellingham and Linden, it's not true. Traffic impact fee, we will be the highest in the county. In some cases, a substantial amount. I believe that a 100%, that our impact, putting our impact fee high enough to fund 100% of the Thornton overpass down to 2nd Street is not right. I think that's just not, that first of all, it's not practical. It's not going to happen. We've even admitted it's not going to happen. But we're going to go ahead and charge the fee as though it is going to happen. I can't support it. Sorry.
Councilperson Teria?
A couple comments. I am in support of this. We have to start somewhere. And I've been saying lately and do believe that ultimately we have to protect the current citizens of Ferndale in what they're used to and what their standards are as new development comes in. And also, I'm not sure if it's accurate to say it's a friendly amendment, but addressing what we talked about earlier and making sure that it's in the ordinance for, I believe the way we talked about it was an annual cost of living adjustment being included in there. And I'd like to see that part of the ordinance. So,
staff?
In response to that, 15.44.090 on page 80, number 2, the impact fee schedule as set out in attachment B shall be updated on or before May 1st of every odd year, so 2 years from today, at a rate adjusted in accordance with the Washington State Department of Transportation Construction Cost Index.
Already there.
Excellent.
Perfect. We all missed it.
Thank you. Councilors Goodrich and Malpezzi, and then we have members of the audience, I believe, wants to speak too.
When this was first proposed, I was in favor of it because I thought it would be equitable throughout the city. One fee, no matter where you build. It'll give a break to some people. It will be more expensive to others, depending on how they build. But at least it was equitable. But I don't like the fact of the, as Councilman Hansen brought up, the cost of Thornton being in there. It's not a realistic project. The rest of the projects on there are realistic. There's something that could be done within the next couple of years even. But Thornton's not going to happen for a while. And to include that much money. Now, if you put in there, say, we just want to include the design costs to see to get a design to build over there and say we're going to put a couple million dollars in there to for preliminary design or something, then I could see it, but not to fund the whole thing and build the whole thing. I don't think that's right, and you know, expect people to pay for that today when it's not going to happen in 6 years or whatever. I don't think that's right.
Hezzy, then Mutchler.
I had a couple of questions. Yari, what is the? I know our current fee schedule is totally different methodology. What would it be? Close enough. Everybody knew what I was saying. What would the current rate be today if we rounded it out? Like when we did the example with Ferndale Station.
Like the average?
Yeah, the average.
It's been estimated to be about $2,000 right now overall. There are certainly cases where someone could show I pay $4,000 and someone else pays far less. But that was an estimate that I believe, I saw a calculation from Bellingham. I've looked and it, I would guess that we're in between $1,500 and
$2,000. In this current list of things, this is for a 20-year horizon?
24-year.
24-year horizon. Could that horizon be changed? Or would that, like, tell Transpo to have to start all over?
Well, the city, all cities are required to plan on a 20-year horizon.
Okay.
We were projecting that we would have to do the comprehensive update of the comprehensive plan in 2014, and so this is going out to 2034. This gets us in place where we would only need to amend this in 2014 to get us at 20 years.
Okay. I don't think I understand why we might want to have a long horizon, but can it be changed to a shorter horizon, say 10 years? Theoretically, if we chop the horizon down to 10 years and chop the overall number down to 10 years, wouldn't we still have 2,600 and a more realistic list to get done?
The comprehensive plan must be 20 years, so we must identify projects for the 20-year period. If you chose to only value projects at a lesser time than that, you may be able to. We haven't reviewed that with Transpo.
Well, I'd be interested in seeing if this portion of the comprehension plan, the impact, traffic impact fees, could be based on a shorter time period.
Well, as
I have a similar concern as two other council members pointed out.
To have a 20-year plan and to have fees that are supported by the 20-year plan. We're not required to fully fund it like we talked about. I mean, you could set the fees at virtually zero, but we're still required to have the plan.
I suppose part of it would be, let's say that you only did six-year plan and that we knew that Main Street was coming up in the six-year plan. The costs of Main Street would not be distributed within the full 24-year period, but Main Street, we'd have to pay all of it in the 6 years. Or if Thornton, for instance, if we say, okay, we are doing Thornton in this 6-year plan or in a subsequent 6-year plan, I would guess that we'd have to fund all of that project within those 6 years rather than disperse it out amongst the whole 24-year period. That's my initial.
Okay.
So
I need some help with math here, and I appreciate our colleague, Council Member Hansen's reminder that the Thornton project, even if it's just a narrow, limited, shortened project, is 60% of the cost. Why wouldn't the impact fee then go down to about $1,200? Because when we asked the question of removal, it dropped just a few hundred dollars. So
my math drops it to $1,800.
Pardon?
If we remove
yes.
this $22 million, mm-hmm. my math drops the impact fee to $1,800.
I came down about $12 million because you said this represents 60%. That leaves 40%, so I'm thinking 40% of $2,600, $1,200. $1,200 per trip, but when we asked the question earlier, you dropped it down from 26 to whatever it was, 21, 22. Do you recall that?
I believe it
so
was
I have,
a 24.
Am I doing an apples and oranges thing? What am I doing wrong here?
It is a...
You see why I would think this way. If we're taking out 60% of the projects, why aren't the fees going down 60%?
My understanding of the calculation is it is not as direct as that. You know, 60% of the project equals 60% of the fees, because Transpo has also calculated in the trips that are likely to come in different sectors. So it's not as simple a fee as that. I don't have the calculation in front of me, and I don't know that even if I did, it would necessarily be, oh, there you go, I get it.
Because what's selling me on including Thornton, besides the thought, gosh darn it, we need to move forward on this, is it doesn't seem like it's adding much to the cost. As I mentioned, the Ferndale Station, it was $10,000 out of a $260,000 impact fee. But we're saying it's 60% of the total package. So I don't know how that math works. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but it should be close, shouldn't it? Shouldn't the impact fees be relatively reflective of the total package? We're taking, if we were to hypothetically, as Councilmember Hansen is suggesting, take 60% of the total dollar cost, wouldn't the fees go down quite a bit?
Well, because the fee is based on the trips, the number of trips that it would take to pay for or cause a certain project to take place varies. So it may take 1,000 trips to trigger Thornton being required, but it might only take 500 trips to trigger Main Street being required. And my understanding is that there is part of that analyzed with the different projects, and that is, you know, the nature of where the trips are going or coming.
I feel like you're trying really hard.
it's
and
not.
I'm going to put it this way. I'm in a moment here thinking, I thought I had this figured out. And I need to have this piece figured out. Why is there such a discrepancy in numbers? That's a big help me out. Somebody help me out on this one. Yeah. Does anybody else on council kind of feel the same way? It's like, that's a big difference in numbers. Why isn't it reflected in the impact fees?
Well, I like kind of what the hinting of the mayor has alluded to, is that this is the number one project on the COG. If we say it's a problem and they think it's a problem, the squeaky oil is going to get some grease, or the wheel is going to get some grease, and we need to have it in there. It's reflected, because remember, every time one of those cars from the top of the hill goes across that Thornton overpass on the freeway just to go to Hagen's, they look at all the different intersections, the roundabouts, the downtown traffic, all the stuff they've avoided. So it's just something that needs to happen. We need to put some money and put some focus on it.
And I could buy that if we were putting it into account and saving it, but we've, you know, just been told we're just going to spend the money.
Well, that's up for future councils to wrestle with.
Councilperson Hansen? Yori, I'm a little confused about your statement that the impact fee currently could be about $2,000, because somebody on the council helped me out. 4, 5, 6 years ago, we started to change the impact fee based on a CPI index because it hadn't been done. Mm-hmm. And at that time, we were being told it was between $1,200 and $1,400. The impact fee for traffic was less than the park impact fee. And what's crept into this is because of the averaging of what a home up on the hill might pay versus what they might pay downtown here, is, you know, because if we're raising the impact fee from 2,000 to 26, that's not a substantial increase. But if we're raising it from 1,200 to 26, it is a substantial increase. I'm having trouble with that, with the mathematics of that. Go ahead.
It varies so much, and that's why it's such a problem, because if you look at the last couple of years where we've had very little commercial development. A lot of the development has been the Thornton Woods project, which is on top of the hill, and Skyview. Both of those have at average or higher than average fees, and so that might artificially skew it, where Thornton Woods pays $4,000 per. Now, in 2008, when Ferndale Station went in, Ferndale Station paid lower than average fees, and Sunset Park down at on Sunset across from Laos Trust paid far less than average. So then that would skew it. So if we were talking about it when we started this project, the average fee might be less than $1,000. Now, since we're talking about it, the average fee might be closer up to the $2,000. And so when you did the CPI.
Isn't the math being applied differently under this new ordinance than it was before?
Yes.
In the respect that you not only do you count the number of trips, but that multiplies out into so many impact fees per classification of development.
Yes.
You get one for a single family house, no matter where it is in Ferndale, you get three quarters for a multi-family, but the fast food joint's going to get 20 something for 1,000 square feet.
I think they're closer to 40 something per 1,000.
There we go. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case today, or is it?
No, it is not the case. Well, because there's an even more complicated algorithm, I think, that they use to calculate what a fast food would pay based on the vehicle miles traveled. And within that is the number of trips per 1,000 square feet. But so you have Sonic that paid about $217 a trip when it came in 2008, whereas the same store might have paid close to $600 a trip if it was over where Grant's is.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. I only bring that up because it's when you start talking about what the transportation impact fee is or going to be versus what it is today, and I'm looking at it and saying, whoa, wait, $600 increase, it's a lot more than that.
Depending. Geographic.
I believe some people in the audience would like to speak, so if we open up the audience.
Sure.
Is anybody who wants to step aside, and I see one hand up already. Come forward, sir. Welcome, sir.
David Bravely, 5998 South Bakery Park Drive, Inferno. And I like some of the stuff I'm hearing.
Get close to the microphone, you're a little hoarse.
Sorry, I like some of the stuff. Anytime you guys can consider increasing a fee incrementally, I don't care if you do it 100 times, it's better than doing it 100% overnight. I mean, you know, that's helpful. That's in your comp plan. Predictability. That's what somebody like me relies on. This fee, if it was adopted today as is, on properties that I own in Ferndale, would be an increase of well over $250,000. No, that's just what it is. And that's unfortunate. I mean, it's traffic. It's unfortunate I bought the property and didn't think fees would change like that. And that's where staggering increases are a disaster for planning. I mean, they are, from my standpoint and from yours, there's all kinds of stuff. I want to read. I said this a couple weeks ago, and this is a copy of the comp plan, and this is in the city goals. It's adopted. Again, it's quoted directly from the Growth Management Act, and this says in here, this is under goals 1 through 13, goal number 2, encourage infill by maintaining development standards and transportation impact fee structures that result in lower development costs for infill development. I thought when I came to Ferndale and was buying development property in Ferndale, talking to the city about what it was going to cost, and I had a very expensive education. It's like a Harvard education in Ferndale. That's all right. I mean, it's education. But this is in a comp plan. And I've been told in several other areas that comp plan is gospel. It only changes, you know, changes as we adopt them in the first word. This is in the comp plan. Let me read it again. Encourage infilling by maintaining development standards and transportation impact fee structures that result in lower development costs for infill development. And I am not familiar with the city's fee structure throughout the city. I'm not. I was totally unaware that people up on the hill paid substantially more for parking. I knew there were some bypass charges and stuff. That stuff makes sense to me. Transportation, really what applies to me applies to me, and I didn't know about the rest. But in my specific case, these fees are up. This would be an overnight increase from, they're right around 300% overnight. So maybe I was in a great fee area by, I don't know how it was structured before. I'm just saying, you're asking for a fee increase of 300% overnight. And I think it's outrageous. Here's what it was. For single family previously, Mel, I was paying $875.82. Now it'd be the $26.30. For multifamily per unit, $516.73, and it's going up to $1,510. So the multifamily is 292% increase. Single family is at 300% increase. On one parcel that I own, that's almost $140,000 increase. I have no way of planning for that, and there's all kinds of other stuff. And I mean, there's stuff that talks in impact fees about adopting fair and reasonable impact fee mitigation ordinances. There's ones that talk about structuring them in ways that the development community can handle. And one of those ways, even if this isn't fixed, I mean, if you guys vote on this and it goes, the best thing you could do for developers in the future is give them some
time,
predictability.
But, no. Okay. By the question of the mayor, two more minutes.
Okay. So if you could just, I mean, in the future, the predictability, if you've got millions of dollars of needs and you forecast it out there, whether forecasts are right or wrong, if you can gradually increase it, like what you're trying to do, set up for the next council, it makes sense. Because then something can make sense for me and I could do it or not. But otherwise, it's just, I can't go month to month or do a three-month plan and get through this thing without fees changing. And it's, I'm not talking about a couple $100. I don't care about that. I don't care about a couple $1,000. I care about massive increases that may not apply if you're doing one house or one, maybe even one fourplex wouldn't kill you. But if you look, I'm just, try to look at the aggregate and water and sewer is going up. It's scheduled 10% every year. That's a bite-sized portion. People can make a decision, you know, maybe I better act before that. When you don't know about things, Paul, you actually scared me to death last 2 weeks ago when you said something about, I'm a business owner, for no, but I own a retail business. But when you said something about parks fees going to business, I'm like, well, don't say that out loud. You're going to scare business off. I mean, that's not my thing. My thing isn't to determine how you guys want to determine your money. It's just try to set it up so people can work with you. Try to make it reasonable. I think it's I misunderstood how some of the structuring was on financing some of these projects. Impact fees are supposed to be a marginal. I mean, you want to do some funny math on yours. Just say I put 100 people in front. And so I got to do the traffic improvement on my stuff. But now, what percentage do I have of the Main Street project? 100 people, there's 11,000 here already. I've got about 1%. So why would you pay? You know, you said, I mean, the impact fee shouldn't be more than that. That would be the new development on that project. But to fund it by, now in the parks department specifically, it says, well, it started out at 12%. I think now it's only like 34, 38% for impact fees. But this, and that's what you got to watch going forward in traffic. I don't think you're actually charging the impact fee to the developer. Everybody will get the use of Main Street, not exclusively the new development. Any questions?
Questions for this person? Seeing none. Thank you, David.
Thanks for time.
Anyone else from the public would like to speak? Anyone? Okay. Seeing none. Council, further discussion? Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, you heard the method of calculating impact fees that we're looking at, which is you remind me of the name of the Bible we're talking about here, the big fat thing with all the various trips. What's that called again?
ITE.
ITE. And that's a method we have not used before, but it's a method that is being used.
Well, yeah. He'll explain. We've used the manual.
Yeah.
But
is this?
It depends on where in the city you're at.
Yeah.
So we use the manual to determine the number of trips, or you can have a traffic study done.
We took the manual back in 1997, and then we added a lot of other Ferndale-specific factors to it. What we're proposing here is really stripping all those off and saying, hey, you know, the manual is pretty good with all the other, without all the other adornments on there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there, that's where we are.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Houseperson Alpezzi?
I think I got a question in here. Infill. Is there a way that we can add in the ordinance or resolution to phase in, you know, infill to be more closer, follow our comp plan, such as first 3 years, you know, just these are just numbers I'm pulling out of thin blue sky. First 3 years, give them 50% off. Next 3 to 5, set or 25% off, and then something like that. Or maybe the council wants to permanently make an exception. There's always exceptions to the rule, and I looked at this as a rule, and, you know, why not have an exception for to encourage a specific type of development?
Yeah, it's difficult, of course, you know, tonight to come up with these type of strategies. Realize that right now, infill is one thing, but one person's infill might be not another person's infill. I mean, infill is traditionally where you've got house, 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 empty lot, house, house, house. And then infill is obviously building on that empty lot. But infill could be a new plat that for whatever reason only got 80% built. So it could be a plat that was built 2 years ago, or it could be that empty lot that was there from 1949. So infill is kind of a moving target. Remember, though, too, we've already have a discount program for water and sewer connection fees for geographically based. The theory being is that from an infill standpoint, the lots that are closer to the treatment plant, chances are that house, 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 empty lot, house, house, house concept, as opposed to the new developments that we're seeing predominantly on the periphery of the city. So for water sewer, we have come up with a way to try to encourage the downtown. We might be able to look at this in the future when it comes to park fees, because, again, where a home is located, there may be either a dearth of park facilities or it might be adjacent to a park. So there certainly might be ways for us to look at park fees, and we've already looked at water sewer. Transportation is a little bit of a different animal, because everyone has the right and the ability to drive on all the streets in the city. And so I think it would be very difficult to carve out exceptions for infill, no matter how you defined it, because those that didn't qualify would have a case for arguing that there is no basis for this, that if you build a house near the treatment plant or near downtown in one of those empty lots, they have just as that house has just as much of an impact on traffic as a brand new house, you know, located in a new subdivision on the periphery. So we do things now. We could probably look at things in the future. Transportation fees would be a little harder because obviously what we're trying to do is to get away from the impact, the traffic impact fee by exception, and come up with a more uniform situation citywide. So there's not this winners and losers or more expensive or less expensive, because traffic impacts are traffic impacts.
So correction to say that they could do other incentives based on other fees, but if they wanted to add a reduction of the traffic impact to infill, we'd have to have a separate public hearing.
That's real tough. I can't really even think of a scenario that would be, if someone challenged it, that could be really defended.
But for sure, we'd have to have a...
Now you're really changing.
We'd stop and have to have a public hearing.
Absolutely.
Well, again, why would somebody challenge a lower fee? You know, that's been mentioned several times.
The person who's paying the higher fee.
Well, it's not a higher. It's the...
...specific proposal, and it's such a substantive change, they could argue that you so substantively changed the proposal that you didn't give them another chance to have a hearing.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't mind having another public hearing, but...
It's the guy that doesn't get the discount that feels like he should, because, again, transportation is transportation.
I mean, it still doesn't, you know, degrade the initial, our standard rate, because that's backed up by, you know, the $200,000+ we spent on the study. That's our base rate is fine, and we're just lowering portions of it, and the basis is the council, you know, gives a direction of we want to promote infill like our comp plan says. And as far as defining infill, I'm sure we can all define, you know, infill, or there's a standard definition of infill. That's what I'm not ready to support this in this current fashion. I can need some more work.
Okay, so the 2604 is still on the table, Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, I'm going to just kind of ask the question, just maybe partly for the audience to understand that we currently charge a different amount. This is just residential. I think you mentioned as low as $300. And Mr. Brathwaite mentions he's got an $875, and then up on the hill as high as $4,000, something like that. And that's based on what we perceive as how much of the roads are being used based on where you live. And if you get closer to the highway, you're not going to use Ferndale Roads.
Yes, sir.
And why are we changing that?
We are changing it for consistency and expectations for developers.
Okay. So you could argue that those that have been enjoying the lower fees, even though they haven't built yet, unfortunately, they've just benefited from that system for a long time.
They benefited one of the things with the impact fees, too, is once you charge an impact fee, you can't generally seek to make it up by charging other people more. So for example, one of the concepts in a potential phasing plan would, if you charged it at 80% of your fee, 2604 times 0.80, and then 90, then 100, you could not then say 110 on the last to make it up. That money is lost to the city. So if it incentivized development, came in, and then downtown was built out, you will never get those fees back. Those are gone forever.
Thank you. David mentioned the comp plan a few years ago specifically tied in infilling with traffic impact fees. Is that correct? I don't think it was generally impact. I think it mentioned traffic impact fees. Should we consider that it is in our comp plan? The use of impact fees to encourage infilling, as nebulous as infilling can be, you know, what we mean by that.
I think he raises a good point.
And you have other avenues. I mean, if you want to make residential construction a lower overall fee, I mean, I think last time we went to, it's not just a traffic impact, it's your total developed cost per square foot. So you'd have an avenue to go that if you wish to go there under different fees.
Well, and it's also it's subject to interpretation. I'm ultimately the one that gets to interpret it, so I'll interpret it. Infill, one of the things that we're looking for downtown is mixed-use development so that you can live here, you can work here, and you can play downtown. In that sort of development, if you can integrate that into your development, as we discuss in our downtown zoning, is you have that possibly all in one building. You have your residential upstairs and you have your restaurant downstairs. If that is the case, an applicant would be able to demonstrate that, in fact, they're not generating the same trips that we'd normally expect. You're not generating the separate trips for a residence compared to the business, because those residents are walking. They're not using a vehicle.
They would have to prove that, but they could. Mm-hmm.
But they could. And that would be something where it does incentivize that, where maybe they get even 50% off, depending on the trips.
Yeah, I've actually seen senior housing projects for that very reason get reduced fees, because many of these seniors virtually don't own vehicles.
But couldn't somebody that's not putting in a non-mixed use, like a residential, say David was putting up homes here and say, I shouldn't have to pay $2,600 because I have less impact. Could he make the same argument, the same method?
Or is he stuck with the $2,600?
Yeah, again, if he was putting up senior housing, I could see how he might be able to make that argument, because there would be a – but if he's just putting up residential housing, you know, it's difficult to say that, you know, two homes in different areas of the city generate more or less traffic, assuming that the – household makeup is consistent between
the
two.
Say, for example, I know where he's building right now. The kids could walk to all the schools. Every school the kid needs, they can all walk to. No bus need, no no car needs. I'm just hypothetical.
Right. Was at a city where they built a senior housing, a retirement center, and they didn't have to pay any school impact fees because obviously retirement home and schools are kind of at the opposite end of the life spectrum. So, but transportation, again, is a little different unless you – and some cities, especially in the more metropolitan areas, are getting to be transit-orientated development is a big deal. You know, they're building those light rail lines, and now there's all these apartments that are starting to build virtually on next to the tracks. And they can make accommodations because there is the possibility of increased public transportation and therefore less traffic impact.
But on that line of thinking, the school district tell you that when they instituted the no bus service, if you're a mile closer to the school, on that time, they increased the parents driving there.
Sure.
It's an odd thing, John. I don't understand. Yeah, but parents don't let their kids walk to school anymore. It's odd.
One of the benefits of this methodology is that it is straightforward. And what it does is it allows us in the future to then consider future amendments to it. I mean, we've talked about pedestrian. We've talked about all these other things. What we felt was bringing this together, and for a second we're not talking about the impact fee, though I know that it is an important part of it, but to bring you something that is based on that solid methodology and then saying if 6 months down the road, a year from now or whatever, you want to start talking about giving credits for them to have walking or pedestrian stuff or infill or multifamily or whatever, that would be the way to do it because then you have that steady boat and you can then build on top of it at that point.
Councilor Superior?
I'm in support of the way things are now. I was just going to comment on this that's come up. I think it's hard to figure out who you incentivize and who you don't. You can look at, for example, the development that I live in right now, which is very close to the freeway, which probably did have one of those lower fees, with the idea that people there wouldn't be using the City of Ferndale roads. Well, then North Bellingham closed. North Bellingham School closed, and so now you have everybody in my development going through all of the roads in Ferndale, going through most of Ferndale to get to Cascadia up on the hill, so using a lot more roads, or people like me who go to private school who are carpooling, 10 times up and down the streets of Ferndale. So, you just don't know what somebody's situation is, even though you build residential things thinking, well, these are smaller homes, so they're just going to be for senior citizens that probably won't be driving as much. And then you have somebody with, 10 kids that can move into a two-bedroom house right next door, and, eight of those kids drive cars all over the streets of Ferndale. You just can't know what somebody's situation is, no matter where those houses are built. Going with the flat rate just kind of makes a lot more sense. I feel that we've discussed this for a long time. The staff has answered our questions as we've gone in this direction and then switched directions and answered those questions, then switched directions again and answered those questions. I feel it's time for us to move forward as a city and to be able to provide the developers with some kind of a plan for what to do from here on out. So I'd like to call the question. Move the previous question.
I'll second that.
Okay, we're going to vote on the question. We had four lined up for discussion, but we're going to vote on...
Point of information. Are there any outranking motions to call the question, such as move to table or move to amend? I don't want to adjourn.
Well, that'd be bold.
You can move to take a recess to go to the bathroom.
I don't have to go to the bathroom.
There's nothing that outranks the previous question.
Right.
Okay, so vote on calling for the question. You vote to decide to go to a vote.
And it's a two-thirds majority.
Okay, all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Two-thirds.
Okay, you guys have 5-4.
So discussion is still on. So I have the order of discussion: Zimmerman, Goodrich, Mutchler, Malpezzi.
Well, I'm in favor of this. It may not be perfect, but it's going to move us ahead because if we anticipate the spring building windfall of some large corporations looking at us, we need to be prepared, and we can customize it as we move along, like we've done for the home businesses and things like that. We can kind of get in there and do some surgery to the overall concept. Again, it puts you more in a position to be able to negotiate and again, How many years ago did we have to come back and say, oops, we didn't plan ahead, and now we're playing catch-up and we're there, but we still need to set this together where we got some good, firm financial income for things that we think is going to happen. We can always change it later, but right now we need to move ahead, I think.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I think my question goes more to Administrator Young than Yori. Main Street, the bridge over the freeway, widening that. It says $6 million here. I thought Pioneer Plaza was more than that for that project. But my question is, I'm a big box developer. I buy the land behind Ferndale Event Center. I want to plot my business in there. How much of this is going to be done through the environmental impact study, or are they going to have to do, or is all the other players, or whether it's across the street from McDonald's or whatever, how does that all fit into this?
Yeah, it's a question of proportionality. In when we get done with the planned action ordinance will be basically a cumulative impact traffic ordinance. That is, if all that development comes in, and naturally the trips tend to escalate as the development gets bigger and bigger, if you were to put in one development in one area, you might have a 10% share of that bridge. If you do a bigger development, it might be a bigger amount, and a smaller development, a smaller amount. So the planned action is going to have vehicle trips assigned to all the various projects. And so if you're a big box developer and you come down and you plop down in a particular location, you may pay 40% of one thing, 10% of another, 5% of another, depending on where you are in that quadrant, where your traffic study says your trips are going to come from and go to. So it's based on proportionality, which is theoretically commensurate with your impact. The bigger the impact, the bigger your share.
So the developer is going to have to pay $2,604 times the Bible factor times the number of trips is what they're going to be charged for traffic impact fee. Now, and then that would be applied to the bridge over the freeway or –
Yeah, the way it would work is we're assuming that we're in the planned action scenario.
Yeah.
So the planned action ordinance is in place. You're a big box developer. You're going to plop down within the boundaries of the planned action. You would pay the $2,604 times your number of trips, and then in addition to that, you would be you'd be charged with your proportionate share of those projects not on this list, but that extra list of projects that the planned action is going to come up with. So let's say the $2,604 plus that extra amount came up to $400,000. We decide that you're going to be doing both your on-site and your off-site projects. If your off-site totals $600,000, you would then be able to latecomer that $200,000 difference. If your off-site comes to $400,000, you're done. If your off-site comes to $300,000, you owe us $100,000. So whatever the off-site improvements are required to be, the cost of those are credited back against your required transportation impact fees. To the extent that your off-site improvements exceed what you would pay for impact fees, then you'd be able to latecomer. And to the extent that it's less, then you would simply you'd pay the city the difference.
Okay, I'm back to Councilperson Mutchler, then not Pezzi.
I'm glad you're still standing. Because I'm sensing a 4-3 vote here. And those things happen, I just feel like the heart gets a little faster, and it's like pay attention kind of time. And I feel like staff has done a fabulous job and gone bent over backwards to provide information. But I really, this council member is really stuck on maybe I'm the idiot in the room. This issue, the 60% projects being taken off the table, 60% of costs, and we still only knock off a couple hundred bucks, it tells me I don't understand it. It tells me that I thought I had it, and like that's such a big difference that I'm not grasping something about this. So I need that either tonight or sometime soon before I can support this, because I realize I'm missing something really important here.
Well, and I don't think that it is really as complicated. I think that there are some more steps, but I think that what you can basically look at is My calculations, and I was seeing whether or not Transpo was there, and they may well be, I'm not sure, is that we are projecting approximately just over 8,000 new PM peak hour trips in the next 24 years. Total, and that can vary a lot because we get more shopping centers than residential. We're going to get more trips and all that. But if you're estimating 8,000 new trips, 8,000 times 2604 will get you about almost $21 million by my calculations. If then you were to somehow reduce
by
your recovery
by the millions of the overpass, we can figure out what that 2600 should then be. We all can do the math here, and it's closer to $1,200, not $2,200.
If the council determined that they did not want to pursue Thornton,
yes,
at all, then yeah, I mean, I don't have the math in front
you
of me.
You mentioned earlier we thought it would go down a few hundred. Do you
no, and okay, that's I see where
that's where I'm stuck.
No, that the number that I said to you was if you were to reduce Thornton from where it's at 59% right now to 51%. Like if you were trying to hit $2,400, if you're trying to hit $2,400, you and if Thornton was your pivot, which is the most legitimate pivot. You would take it from 59% down to 51%. So you take it down.
What does that get you at 51% though? What are you?
It gets you the number that you're looking. If you're searching for a number.
Oh,
that's,
and that wasn't my problem then.
No, but that was the number that I gave you, where that $2,400 wasn't totally eliminating Thornton. It was taking it down to
50%. You were asking the number to eliminate Thornton.
If Thornton's off, which is what Councilmember Hansen's pointing out as being unrealistic, what is our impact fees?
No, what I'm pointing out to being unrealistic is paying 100% of the cost.
Through impact.
Through impact.
Yeah.
I don't think Thornton is unrealistic as a project.
Okay.
There are other ways that it's going to have to get funded.
But we would be in agreement that if it was removed, we'd have half the per-trip fee, roughly. Yes.
My guess is you're probably roughly right, but we haven't forecast that. By just doing the math.
Councilperson Malpezzi.
Okay, I'd like to move to table this back to committee for a special meeting on Wednesday. I believe we can have a special meeting.
We can have a special meeting, but I can't do it.
Oh, okay.
How are we gonna
I believe we only had to publicize a special meeting 24 hours. And have
we can't publicize that right now. The Herald is 2 days, and the Record it would run on Wednesday. That's not 24 hours notice. But I don't know that we can know if we have enough time at this point to do a Wednesday.
Well, maybe we call it if there's such a need that we need these impact fees decided, maybe we call it an emergency meeting then.
We have discussed this I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay, can I finish my motion? Yes. Table is back to committee. We publicize a public hearing in anticipation of some major changes to the calculations for next Monday and make a decision next Monday. So table it back to committee and then...
For Wednesday. We would violate the Open Public Meetings Act.
All right, forget the special meeting part.
We would violate the Open Public Meetings Act because we haven't noticed it. We haven't noticed it. I mean, that's the problem.
It's the minimum for 10 days.
No, we have to... Okay,
forget the special. Let me start over. Hit the delete button. I would move to table this. I would move to table this back to committee for Wednesday.
Next Wednesday? That's our next.
Correct. Okay. The next scheduled committee meeting Wednesday. Back to committee. Finance.
Okay, moving on. You had a comment? Or?
I'm not sure what council is looking for.
I suggested to move it to committee.
I'm not sure what information I can provide you or we can provide you. I don't know what the question is.
Councilperson Malpezzi.
Some of the information is a calculation. If we remove Thornton from it, what would the impact fee be? I mean, how can I'm prepared to make a motion to amend the motion to remove that, but I'm really hesitant voting on that without knowing what that number is going to be. If it's going to drop down to 12, you know, I'd say maybe we add a little bit more to it. If it drops it down to 18, maybe we're about right. So without that information, I don't want to vote on that amendment. But.
Councilperson Ingram?
Yes, I'd like to suggest about a 5 or 6 minute adjournment so that we can get the students out of here.
Good idea.
It's 8 o'clock, and during that time, Yori, could you make those calculations for us?
I can do my.
Okay, 5 minute break. We'll get the students out of here.
It's probably going to go down a chunk, so then it just becomes, do you want to include Thornton?
So it would be what, 37?
I personally would say it just.
Really? You've got to start somewhere with this, though. But wouldn't it be nice if we had a portion of it, you know, put aside?
It's not going to get put aside, though. By we're going to spend it doing all this other $15 million worth of projects. So in 15 years, we're going to have a zero balance and still have to do Thornton.
That gives us 37,492.
It'll be like our police if we left one fund where we're supposed to fund medical for police officers, yet we have no money in there to fund them when we get sick.
We have some.
Has to be signed by May 12th.
For a feasibility, Thornton.
I still think we can have a special meeting with him now and then.
Hey, Yuri, could we do something like that? Like, if you took a look at the issues before.
We'll go down.
What'd you say? If you take
way to go. Good job.
So we're going to be looking for $15,115,000.
You're incredibly lucky.
You eliminated that 22 out of 37. So if you take that 15 and divide that by 14,000 and 20 trips, it's 1,048. The math just isn't
that simple. That's the bottom, 1,048. Take Thornton all the way out.
Exactly. I think 15%. That takes.
I think if we took a percentage of, you know, 20% of that number, I think that there'd be more people up here in favor of.
And my number is
18. Oh, absolutely. They pick a number, we can back in.
What did we start?
802.
We start up.
So if you took 20% of it,
it would depend on which block you look at.
You have a calculator out right there?
Yep.
37,800,000 times
37 million. How much?
800,000 times 0.2.
What is 15%
times 0.2? 7,560,000.
Okay. Times 59%.
Times 0.59.
And then so
44,060,000.
Okay,
I'm sorry, 4,460,000.
Nobody is paid. Okay.
So
-17,900,000.
Okay, you want to roll into your seats here?
$19,592,000.
Okay, back in
session.
Okay, we've been playing with a few numbers here.
Eight.
The math is not as straightforward as you think because the percentages are allocated to each one of some of the projects, so it's just not a straight math exercise. But it appears, I should start off by saying, it'd make it a whole lot easier if you just tell us a number and we'll make the rest of this work.
Yeah.
So if you want 2,400 or you want 2,200, that'd be great. Then we'll go back and make the percentages work out. 23. Well, there you go.
That's a number I'll support.
No, that's a backwards way of going, though.
We have a motion and a second for the 2604. So if we're going to go a different direction.
Well, didn't we already call the question? No, sorry. No, call the question.
No, we did.
Failed. Okay, so we still
have it. Guessing. Councilperson, yes.
I move to amend the motion. I move to amend the motion so that the Thornton Road percentage be adjusted downward so that the fee comes in at 2,300.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. We're going to vote on the amendment. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Hang on, discussion.
Are we going to talk about it?
Yeah, there can be discussion.
Okay, can be discussed. All right. Discussion on 23. I'll go with Mount Pezzi first.
Okay. I'm not going to support it. Just on the principle of I think we're doing this backwards.
My thinking is along that same way. I didn't hear there was so much discomfort with the 2,600. It was just where the numbers were coming from. If you're looking at trying to adjust the numbers to feel more comfortable with what's going into what you have with the number, I'd be more comfortable going a different route to get there, like reducing what's going in for the Thornton Street and just saying, let's take 20% of that $37 million cost with the idea of that's what's probably going to get spent the next 6 years.
That's exactly what I'm just...
Okay, doing. And then taking that number and seeing what bottom number you come up with. Not let's take a number and feed stuff in so we get that number, but let's reduce this column and see what we end up with over there. I'm more comfortable with logic going behind it.
Goodrich, and then back to him.
Yeah, I have to agree with Councilwoman Feria. I would like to see just some money put aside for Thornton, a feasibility study, whether it's 10, 15% of the thing, $3, $4, $5 million or whatever. Say, okay, this is the feasibility to do it as far as that, and then seeing what dollar amount that comes up with. Versus saying, okay, you know, 2,300, make it work. I just don't see that logic of that, and I don't know what that would get us in the end as far
just
as Thornton.
Quick comment. Well, no, we can back into these numbers again as long as we don't go above the threshold that's defensible. We can go below it, and then. But I was going to say, if you want us. In some ways, we're heading towards the same thing, insofar as if you pick a number, 2,300, we can make it work. Why? Because 2,300 seems to be at least a good number for one council member, purely subjective. That's the same thing as saying, let's only fund 15 or 20% of Thornton. Why 15 or 20%? Because it gets the lumber lower. So you're stabbing at a number, either a dollar number or a percentage number, but the outcome is the same. You end up with a number less than the 2604.
Hanson, then Feria. Over to Zimmerman.
Hey.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, You're actually after Hanson, sorry.
My methodology is less scientific than what you're thinking. My methodology is this. As I looked around the room, I'm anticipating that there's going to be a 4-3 vote here shortly on 2604. It may be a 4-3 vote that loses, and it may be a 4-3 vote that wins. I'm throwing the amendment out because that's one I will support, and then I think I can guarantee a 4-3 vote that will win.
Or a 5-2 winning vote.
Or a 5-2, could be. Right.
Either one will be winning.
That's politics.
There you go.
Well, I just wanted to make the comment response to Councilman Goodrich's comment about putting money aside for a feasibility study for the Thornton overcrossing. We did that. We paid $200,000 3 years ago. It's already been done. It's feasible. So to put money aside for a feasibility study when the feasibility study's already been done, all right. If you want to do, if you want to set something aside or designate something in the Thornton fund, if there is such a thing,
there is.
do some preliminary engineering.
Some kind of design.
You know, some preliminary schematic design work or something like that, and find out what this thing's actually going to cost. We know it can be done.
It's just
a matter of.
It's already been done. The bridge is 14 million.
Yeah. Well, it was.
That was what.
It was.
And we well, yeah, out it, 25,000 to get that number.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Council First Perian.
Oh, you done? Well done. Yeah. I understand where Councilman Hanson is going with his reasoning. However, it is not logical enough for me to be supportive of to take a number and say, let's just backpedal into it. I cannot be supportive of that reasoning. I'm sorry. However, if we can take a percentage and say we can all agree that the whole thing's not getting done in 6 years, if we say 20% of the cost to put more towards getting some better numbers towards getting Thornton, and you took 20% of that cost estimate and saw what number you ended up with, I can be in support of that.
Okay, speaking towards Councilperson Hanson's motion, Councilperson Zimmerman and Mutchler.
Mel, I kind of agree with you. If we pick apart that number, get it down from 37 down to 15 as far as the flyover from getting us over the bridge at Thornton, well, that's going to adjust our numbers a little bit. And there's that WAG, the wild ass guess, that if that works, I just say it's easier to give up money than it is to get it. So if we start high and we drop it down a little bit, we're almost there. I still just shake my head. Is this the way the government works? Where we should pay $250,000 to get all these finely tuned, highly
exact SWAT.
Yes, we did all this stuff to do this, and then we come and we butcher up all this.
SWAT.
Yeah.
So, Councilperson Mustler.
I like it, and number one, it keeps Thornton on the list. Number two, and importantly, I think it hopefully keeps us from being the highest traffic impact fees in the county. And lastly, just a conversation I had with Greg I during the break, I think we need to keep Thornton on the list because I think there may be a way for us to get some help from Pacific Gateway when those trains start backing up here in Ferndale. And we before that happens, we need to get away out of town. And there may be a way to leverage that if it's on our list. You got to give us a way out of town because you're now stopping our 263 over here. So politics is politics. I think this is a reasonable compromise. And, yeah, you backed into it, but I've backed into a lot of things before sometimes things work out.
Councilor Seria.
I have nothing else to say.
Okay. So we have on the floor any further discussion on Mel's motion or amendment to 2,300? Any further discussion on that? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor of the motion for 2,300, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
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 I'd like to speak towards the new, the amended main motion. The formula is basic math. It's the TIF recovery cost divided by the total growth trip ends from model, which is 8,023. So,
it doesn't work out,
That's I'm working off of page 46 of two council meeting, one at least one council meeting ago.
That's where we were having our problems on the math here. If you look on the color sheet here, not this color sheet here, we want to get a total of $37,492,600. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
And if you divide the $37,492,600 by 2604, you end up with 14,420 trips. So the math is a little more complicated. It's not as straightforward as
well, then their explanation then is goofed up then.
I think it's because you apply different percentages to some of these different projects. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Pretty straightforward.
Councilperson Hanson?
Well, just complete clarification now. We now have decided that the traffic impact fee that we're going to vote on, the main motion is now $2,300 to be the figure on Thornton Road to be adjusted by staff to fit that number. How, even though you don't like it, I know you don't like it, but that's the way it is. Everybody understanding that? I moved the previous question.
Second.
So we're going to vote on the main motion, which is now
we're going to vote on the question.
Two-thirds again.
Vote, call on the question, and discussion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, 6-1, ending discussion. Now, to vote on the main motion,
2,300.
I don't care which way it goes.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Oops, I'm sorry, I spoke incorrectly. I wanted to know.
Forgot what we're voting on.
No, I just had a... No. Got excited.
It was the auctioneering thing.
Okay, and so do we still have... We
no,
have
I didn't
four.
Get
yeah. Okay. All those opposed?
Aye.
Okay, 4-3 passes.
Can I make a comment, please?
No.
Please. I think it's interesting. Thank you. I asked Yuri about the cost of Pioneer, keep calling it Pioneer, Ferndale Station, and he indicated that it would be charged about 100 trips when all was said and done, right? So if it's going to take 14,000 trips, we would need about 140 Ferndale Station-like things, equivalents, to pull it off. It's that interesting.
It's a lot of development.
Okay, next item on the agenda. Wow, that was council. That was. Thank you. Thank you personally for me. There's a developer that's waiting for my phone call, so I'll make it as we leave the meeting tonight.
Did we go too low?
What's that?
Did we go too low?
It passed. That's good enough. That's
No. He just wanted something passed.
Some information.
We left some money on the table.
I don't really care what you passed. Just pass something.
Give me something to take
Okay,
care.
Well water supply project.
Good evening, council members. The well water supply project was bid under two separate schedules, Schedule A for facilities and then Schedule B for the water main. So Schedule B, we opened bids, awarded the bid to RAS Construction, and now we're ready to move forward on the construction work. We're planning on issuing notice to proceed, I think, May 16th, I think it is. And we want to have our pre-con in just another week. And so staff is recommending that the city enter into a consultant agreement with RH2 Engineering. They perform the design work. They're very familiar with the project. They have the expertise in-house. We'll need a structural engineer, mechanical engineer, and electrical engineer. This project is highly technical compared to our typical street project. And so when I prepared the staff report, I didn't have the final cost estimate yet, and we're looking at a contract for May through the end of December, and I just want to do the contract for that time period. Then I'd like to see where we're at as far as hours and dollars wise, and then because the project will go into 2012, but then I'd like to just amend the contract with updated information. This here we've just estimated how many hours for the inspector. And so that's why I just want to go through 2011. And the total dollar amount we're looking at, $306,700. So that is a little under 10% of our construction amount.
Councilperson Ingram?
Yes, I would like to move that we pass agenda bill number 1105-004.
Second. Okay, the move is second. Further discussion, Councilperson Goodrich, Hanson, and then Zimmerman.
I thought we had to be done by the end of this year. What's going to extend into 2012?
By the mid-December, we will have one filter online. So we will be off of PUD water with one filter. We run that filter, we check it out, and make sure everything's working okay. Then we proceed to the second filter because our water treatment plant has two filters. So we're doing it one step at a time and making sure everything works rather than putting the whole plant up and up going. And so what will extend over into the following, into January, probably February, is getting that second filter online, testing, getting the operators trained, completing operation and maintenance manuals, all the closeout work.
So would you have a primary filter, then a backup one is the second, or are they both?
Well, they're both the same, but you just, the south filter, we're going with that one first, and then we follow up with the north.
But as far as the construction, they're all going to be there by the end of December, they're just not going to be in operation? Or
they'll be working on both of the filters, but they still may have some work to finish up on the one filter. But the idea is to get one filter up and going. RH2, they'll need to run a number of tests to make sure everything's working okay. The thing is, we will, per the schedule, we'll be off PUD water once we've got that filter up and going. We have to be. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because once we make the conversion, we're groundwater.
Councilperson Hanson and then Zimmerman.
I was going to make the motion.
Oh, okay. Councilperson Zimmerman.
Now, you bid this in two sections. Did RAS get both sections?
On Schedule B, let's see, we open May 10th. So we haven't opened that, okay. The bids for that part of the work. We had to move forward with the bid on the facilities because of just the timetables associated with ordering the equipment.
Sure.
And then the permitting, they were on different tracks.
And part of that question is, why I ask this, is it going to look good? Because you got the well house, the pump house, all those type of things. You know, a lot of things, we should take a look at the actual structure. You know, maybe you've had it, maybe you've presented it, but I don't think I recall seeing it. I'm on the public.
Because the structures for that we have, we'll have the shop and also a pump house at Douglas site. I mean, they just look like your standard pump house.
Yeah, the one at Douglas site. I mean, the new ones. Mm-hmm. Anything new to be built, you know, I'd like to take a look.
Yeah, because the one at the shop will definitely look better than what we have there now. When we have there now, we'll be demolishing and building a new one.
Yeah.
Because it's not up to any kind of standards, and it's just not in very good condition.
And the other thing that I brought up before, and I was hoping that you might take it upon yourself to give me some kind of a wag.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that redundant. But the idea of when we lay that pipe across the field, that 20-acre field, I think we should think about, you know, doing it differently so it becomes a bicycle walking path. You got to have it under 3 feet of dirt. Well, put it under there and raise it up there. Don't muck it out through that, you know, wetland all through there. I think it would be, if you pencil it out, I'm willing to bet that it would be a less expensive way to do it. And that then we have our part of our trail system that we've been wanting to have a long time.
So yeah. We already have a design.
Swag. Can you just bring a swag for that?
No, I'd have to look at it. But we already have our project designed. We already have it out for bid. If we did that, there would be additional fill, and then plus it would change our permitting requirements. So we would pretty much, we'd be starting over.
Not if you take the fill from the site itself.
But we would be introducing new fill to that area. So, I mean, there's different permitting requirements.
Dig it out, and yeah.
Let's do with that issue. Whatever. It becomes a separate issue. Yeah. Why don't you two discuss?
Because this is Schedule A, yeah.
You can both debate it. Councilperson Malfezzi.
Is that an acronym or a name or a word?
Swag.
Swag.
Well, there's a guess.
We're using a lot lately.
Where were you?
I was wondering what
$20 million.
I was wondering what the S was. All right. What's the backup plan if filter A goes down?
Then we would need, because the idea is we'd still be on PUD water until we get until we're comfortable with the operation of that filter. Then once we are okay with that, we convert then to that filter. Then we are off of the PUD water. So we have that two-week period. Then once we're off of PUD water, then we're assuming everything's working okay with that filter. We're moving to get the second filter online.
So how much of a time frame are we going to be running with one filter and no backup?
Probably two. It could be 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
That's for Zimmerman. Steve, what I from being down there and looking at being in the brewing business and looking at water and seeing how it all comes through there, I think we're a lot better off. I mean, when we get water from PUD, it's pretty dirty. We have to do a lot of work to it to get it to the point where we want it. When we're taking already, we're sucking it through a big old sand filter. It's going to be a lot better right off the get-go. So I think it's going to taste better, look better, and in a lot of ways, it'll be less expensive for the overall scheme of things. So they're just taking that river.
Tell everybody to call you when pump A goes down.
Yeah.
Well, we've already used the well water directly. You can use the well water directly without going to through. The problem is it's too high in manganese, but it can be used directly.
Yes, that's correct. And, you know, we're hoping that we don't have to go there, but, yeah, thank you for pointing that out. That is a backup.
So that's the backup.
Mm-hmm.
Right, without
any further questions
that makes
for
me better.
Dennis Corlega? Any further questions?
Unfiltered water.
Okay, vote on the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed. Motion carries 7-0.
All right, thank you.
Great. Okay. And Mr. Burnett.
Don't mess with that water.
Sometimes when you do the math, you end up with fees that increase. Sometimes when you do the math, you end up with fees that decrease. And in this case, we have building valuation update. Over the past however many years, the city of Ferndale has used a regional modifier that basically multiplies valuations that are provided by the International Code Council that are used to determine building permit valuations and fees. That modifier was generally 9% higher than the national average, but was not supported after 2003. However, we continued to use that modifier to determine our building valuation. At the direction of council, we looked at what other jurisdictions had done as far as the modifier. As you will recall, as I just said, Ferndale has always used a 9% modifier. The city of Bellingham uses about 1% modifier, so does Whatcom County, and the city of Linden uses a 3% modifier. As with everything else, the math gets more complicated. What the city is proposing to do is to look at 95% of our building division's budget and to try to capture 95% of that budget through building permit fees so that we're a cost center. The building permit fees don't pay for other things, and other things don't pay for the building department. Based on 95%, if you calculate it out, we then use a modifier of what amounts to about 1.25% I should say, which puts us identical with the city of Linden. It puts us well below what Whatcom County would charge, and it puts us up ahead of Bellingham's permit fees, but there are other fees, such as a fire department fee that the city of Bellingham charges that we do not. So I used 9-point font this time, which should make it easier for you to read. There you go. What this results in is a decrease in building permit fees across the board. Thanks to our building permit specialist who corrected the community development director, who, as you may have guessed, isn't able to do math on his feet, we end up with that across-the-board reduction. So the adoption of this would result in lower fees for your contractors.
Councilor Goodrich.
That's what I wanted to make sure I saw this right, because in the committee,
you said that there would be a decrease for some and an increase for others, if depending on where you fell in that $250,000 range. And so what you found out later on was that was not correct?
Turns out I may have had a concussion or something like that when I was speaking to you.
It was too early in the morning or
yes.
something?
Yes.
Okay. So this is a fee reduction.
It is a fee reduction.
David Braithwaite had an important point he wanted to make.
Point to us. We always are welcome for
yeah.
public comments.
Yeah.
So this is an agenda item. You may come forward.
This could be a happy thing for the builder community.
You all. It's all perspective.
Yeah. It's going the right direction. Right?
Yeah.
And I don't know what the dollar amount is. So here's just a little heads up. So I'm not going to oppose a fee reduction. It's just realistic.
Never know.
Here's the thing. No, I guess I'd like to see it. I don't know how you do it more fair, and I don't know what it's going to be actually. Here's the reality. Currently, so this is going to change down. Currently, a building that's assessed for $372 has a building valuation of $472. So it's got to go down a lot. I mean, it's got to go down about 20%. The current building valuation as it was figured all last year on permits was over, it was 38% higher than the county, I'm sorry, than the Whatcom County Assessor's Office for valuation on the structure alone. So the building permit was higher than real market value, higher than the actual building costs, the permits, and the land. Just the building valuation. So I'm just saying, you get adjusted down 1-5%, and you're still not close to a assessed value. And I got to tell you, I've had property on the market in Whatcom County for over a year at about 15% below assessed value that hasn't sold. It's a step in the right direction. I mean, I think it needs to be reevaluated every year, a lot like what you guys were talking about on traffic or anything else. If you can look at it more often and incrementally up, down, then there's no big swings either way. I'm not saying you got to drop it 25% and be back up another 15% next year. I'm just saying that's where it's going. The same valuation in 05 was 342. In 2010 was 472, an increase of $130,000 in an identical building in Ferndale, a quarter mile apart. Seems like a lot when the real market value is less. I mean, appraised value is less. The assessed value is less. It has to go down. I mean, this is the kind of thing that should happen that directly reflects what the reality in the building community is. And more things should be tied to that. I mean, there's lots of stuff in your comp plan that's tied to the developer's ability to pay. I know you're not thrilled about that. That is how the comp plan's written. It's actually, I don't want to go back on the traffic fee. But it did specifically say, hey, okay, I'll let you bite. This is the kind of thing that should be talked about, adjusted incrementally up or down based on the market, because that is the builder's ability to pay. Thanks.
So just before you leave, so my clerk is completely happy.
Yeah.
Name and address.
Oh, I'm sorry. Same as it was last time.
I know.
Dave, Braithwaite.
S-A-A. Same as above.
Director Burnett.
Based on that, it is interesting seeing the disparity in some jurisdictions. Linden and Ferndale would value the same 4,000 square foot fourplex at $360,000. Whatcom County would value it at about $370,000, but the real big difference, since it's more complicated math, $360,000 gets you a building permit fee of $4,000 in both Linden and Ferndale, but gets you a building permit fee of $5,700 for basically the exact same project in Whatcom County. So Whatcom County, ironically, charges more than any other jurisdiction by far in this.
Councilperson Mutchler?
So what you do is, in the office there is a home plan come at you and you calculate the value of the home at $400,000 and you multiply that by a multiplier, and that's the fee, correct? So in theory, let's say that David's correct and that we're overvaluing everything and we drop everything 25%, you would just adjust the fee modifier, just like the county does on the taxes. You know, if his assessments go down, they just raise the multiplier.
Well, and I think that's exactly what the county does in this
case,
too.
Comes out the same amount.
It could.
Okay, mm-hmm. Council, you have an ordinance before you.
Motion.
Has it not been a motion?
No.
Can we get them?
I'll make a motion to approve the building valuation ordinance. 1105-005 agenda bill.
Second.
Okay, we move in second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Carry 7-0. Okay, moving right on. Mayor reports. Boy, the Friends of the Library are looking for some strong, able, accurate people from 8 to 2 to help them hang quilts that they want to sell in the library this Thursday. I don't know the exact times when they knew you. You can try to contact Noreen Amend, but she's looking for bodies to help her just hang quilts. They're going to hang them from the rafters, I guess. So if anyone can help, that'd be great. She's asked for public works, but I don't know if we'll have people to do that. Okay, so we don't have public works people, so if council can help. I'm in a COG retreat all day long, so if you can help the library.
When was the time again with that?
Well, they're saying 8 to 2. The library is closed that day. But I would contact Noreen on that and see if you can get a better time.
Why is the library closed that day?
I don't know.
To hang quilts.
Why it's closed that day. She says, well, during the library's closed. And I went, really?
I think on Thursdays they don't open until later.
They open late.
Oh, okay.
They open late. That's right.
They're random hours.
Okay, or they don't open until 2.
So they stay later.
Okay, they don't open until 2 on Thursdays, so that's why. So they're all hungry for that. So if you can help out, Noreen would love that. Okay, the Pioneer Pole Building on Portal Way. This is something Connie would really want to go to. It's a man cave demonstration Saturday at 10 a.m., so you can go there Saturday and see how man caves are going to have all display with cars and everything there. So
we'll be man barbecue.
I'm sure it'll be a giant man operation. And then it goes in the same thing. I don't know why they would schedule a man cave demonstration on Mother's Day weekend. That's all right. And it's also community garage sale day on that Saturday. So, two council reports. Any council reports? Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, just the State of the Community meeting is at WeQ May 10th, 4 through 6. That's the Community Resource Center. You know, some of the people that – I think it was a breakfast last year.
Yeah.
But it's 4 to 6 at WeQ on the 10th.
Saving budget. And that can feed people. Okay, any other council reports?
Short swimming pool report. We're just kind of keep talking about, keep moving ahead.
Along.
We're working with some of the, what do you say?
Floating along.
Floating along. Yeah. Well, it turns out, talk about local and industry. We found out through one of my customers that one of the largest manufacturers of these floating bulkheads that you put in the pool and you move them, that they jump off, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they're out of Arlington. And it's just like, you went on their website called Stark Bulkheads. They're all over the world, so it's going to be a wealth of information. But, yeah, local source, local jobs in Washington.
Hmm. Any other council reports? Okay, seeing none. Staff report, city administrator?
Nothing.
Treasurer?
Nothing.
Planning director?
Nothing.
Really? Okay, good for you.
Yeah,
police chief?
Yeah.
Public works?
Clerk?
Okay, we do have an executive session. The executive session will be now entering an executive session pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, subject to discuss potential litigation. I estimate that the executive session would be over by 9 o'clock and we'll go back into regular session. So,
do we anticipate action after?
No, we don't anticipate any action.
Well, I thought in order to discuss litigation, you had to have your attorney present.
No.
No.
No?
Huh.
I guess it's informative, not for action.
Potential
I've been told that once or twice.
Huh?
Okay, so I'm going to get the public out. We'll be back in session at 9.
I remember one of the.
Sounds good.
That little deli dick was.
Or.
And it's not litigation that our city attorney would be representing us on.
Well, I guess we'll find out more.
You're not going to hang around for this?
That makes sense.
Okay. Is your financial
stuff Are we suing you? Are we
suing Move to
second. Just.
Okay, I'll favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Yeah, that's why you got to. The stuff that you got to get in the file to bring you. You can't just bring up new stuff out of left field.